Let's talk about something important.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
What we've got here is...
It's a little game of show and tell. You don't want to show me nothing, but you tell me everything.
The jig is up. A communist, fascist, progressive, an evil, mind-controlling, symbol-ridden, living, breathing evil...
Oh, that is a violent, odious lie.
Well, sir, while I may not agree with what you say, I'll defend to the death your right to say it.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome, everyone. And hi, Julene.
Hello, Peter.
I know it's probably bad radio to talk about the weather, but wow, what is happening?
Well, we've been hit with a little bit of a storm.
Deep freeze. Actually, there's not much snow on the ground here in Detroit. The things are happening all over the Midwest.
Yeah.
But tonight it's going to be low 9, and today, Monday, it will be high 14, low 3.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was delightful yet undelightful. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, you know how you were a little late because you were having trouble getting the ice off your car?
Well, it was poor planning, you know.
Well, I had to go in my garage and get a little Wunderbar, a little pry bar, crowbar, open my door.
Oh, did you really?
I
could have picked you up.
So why do we talk about something that I introduced by saying is boring radio?
Yeah.
Because I was looking at these right-wing websites, and they're all over the fact that it's so cold everywhere. And I'm thinking, what is with these people? And I go, oh, I get it. This is their proof that there's not global warming.
I know. They do it every winter. It's so laughable. I mean,
there's like 6 items on this one very famous one, which I'm not even going to give, including a chill map. And I mean, they don't get it, do they?
No, they don't. They don't understand that it's climate change, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A few years ago, I'm trying to think, you know, I meant to bring this up, but if you go to Detroit and go to Yahoo Weather, or actually I think it's weather.com, they have the highest and lowest. And in this century, in other words, since 2000, it's been as high as 70 degrees on December 12th and as low as 7 below. So it's all over the board. So what would you say if it was 70 today? You'd say, oh, well, there's global warming. Well, that's not the case.
They would. Certainly. No, they would.
So I always think, I don't get it. I mean, I get why, for instance, the Koch brothers, these billionaires that finance the teabaggers and other people on the right wing, they've made their billions off of energy, and they're fearful that people will say, you know, all that coal you're burning and all that oil you're burning, and that's all owned by the Koch brothers, it could cut into their bottom line. Even though they're multi-billionaires, the idea that there would be, you know, some restrictions on the pollution that they create just drives them insane, to the point where they're willing to give up hundreds of millions of dollars to fund the right wing, to the extent that there probably wouldn't even be much of a right wing if it wasn't for these multi-billionaires that are paying for it all. So here's what I think. I've said this before. How do I know whether there is climate change or global warming? I'm sitting here
pressing buttons, they say.
So we, unfortunately, in so many aspects of life, depend on the experts. And you know, they pull the rug out from under us any number of times, to be sure. But the climatologists, the climate scientists, almost none of them have any vested interest in the outcome of what they're analyzing.
It's not their pocketbook that stands to gain or lose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether there's climate change or not.
So the vast majority of them say, yes, there is climate change. And what happens and why this is climate change, even though it's evidence, some evidence of climate change, is there, as the world heats up slightly, there's more moisture in the air. So you get bigger rains, bigger storms, you get bigger snowstorms, and all of that. But even that is just taken as an article of faith on my part. But again, there is no reason to suspect these people at all. The climate change deniers are great. Numbers of them are funded by ExxonMobil and the Koch brothers and all of this.
The deniers, right.
The deniers, yeah. And by the way, we're not talking about the the Koch brothers. We're talking about the K-O-C-H. Give them a Google if you're not
sure. Yeah, give them a good hard Google.
Yeah, billionaire financiers of the common people. You know.
Right.
Come on. Please.
Peter
Werby and Jelene Jordan with you on Night Call, something we do every Sunday. This show has been around for 40 years.
Going into the 41st year.
Yeah. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF, which in numerical expression is?
It's 313-298-9743.
If you'd like to email us, short ones, please, if you'd like them read, or any chance, we don't read them all, but if there's a chance of reading them, please make them short. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And we have a Facebook page.
We do, and you know what? I've been so busy. You know, I'm taking some classes, continuing ed stuff, and so I've been real busy with my finals. I haven't even been on there this week. I apologize to everyone, so maybe you can all pick up the slack and post some things for me in this final couple weeks of my schooling.
Our friends can.
Yeah. If you sign up, you can post things.
So post things.
No tea baggers are allowed. That's my rule.
So what do we do? What if the baggers start?
I just delete their asses.
I mean, it's our site, right?
That's right.
Yeah. But so anybody who is, I see folks. I don't do Facebook.
No.
So
it's not, you'll find
I gotta ask about this. So if some teabagger, if they list themselves as the friend of Night Call, and then they could put on there, you suck.
They could. It happens all the time with radio shows.
Does it?
But, you know, and most talk show hosts don't care and just leave it up there. But, you know, this is Mama Tree Hugger's site here.
Not to be confused with,
The other one.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Thanks to Stephanie, who is answering your phones at 313-298-WRIF, who also posts our podcast by noon on Monday. So it's right up there. You can subscribe to the podcast as well. There is no fee, and it will be sent to you when it is posted. Okay. Other than the weather, the big items, of course, is the continuing flurry over the WikiLeaks. The WikiLeaks, 250,000 secret cables that have been released via this website, WikiLeaks, under ferocious assault on all levels. The founder, I think most people know, Julian Assange, is in a British prison waiting extradition to Sweden on charges of rape. Now, the rape charges, I'm going exactly where I don't want to go, but okay.
It's very interesting. It's in Sweden. They have a whole another. Go ahead.
Nobody thinks that Julian Assange grabbed some woman from the bushes and forcibly assaulted them. Yeah, that's pretty clear. He had consensual sexual relationships with two Swedish women. And,
Who hasn't? Come on.
Who's the, give me some pronouns.
I'm just kidding.
With Julian?
No, who hasn't had sex with two Swedish women?
Nights apart.
Really?
Yeah, well, that's what kind of pissed them off.
Who hasn't?
Well, here's the deal. There was this whole, I don't even want to get into the details of it, but it was something he was using a condom and it broke, and then they wanted him to get tested for STDs, and he refused, and this is a whole, I don't get it, but trying to figure this all out is pretty, pretty difficult. Sweden has some very, very strict laws governing intimate behavior. In other words, that it's not like, when we think of rapes, this violent act, nothing to do with sexuality, all about domination, about violence towards women, a horrid act without the slightest, men say, oh, she was dancing so sexy. Sorry, guys. Women should be able to walk down the street. This is kind of crazy. Walk down the street naked without you touching them. In fact, that's a good.
Yeah.
Remember we used to quote a long time ago those feminists that say that much of the world's problems would be solved if men agreed never to touch anyone else without permission.
Yeah, we haven't said that one for a long time, but it's so true.
There you go.
So true.
Yeah.
I don't know what makes these men think that they have that power over women. Sick.
Here, Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, asked two women when he did out on dates in August. He may not have known that Swedish laws protecting women in their sexual encounters include wide-ranging definitions of sexual assault and rape. Let me see if there's any more.
There's different levels of it.
Different levels.
Severe, regular, less severe.
And he was the lowest level, but still.
Yeah, it says, which may not involve violence, but still includes imposition of sexual intercourse on a person against their will. Well, apparently there is a little scorn going on with these babes.
Well, one of them wrote a piece. Now, see, some people have suggested they are what they call in the spy world honeypots.
Oh.
That, you know, guys can't control themselves, right?
Yeah, right.
And so this one woman had actually written a piece called Seven Ways to Get Revenge on a Man.
Oh, yes, I saw that.
And this other woman who's in Sweden was involved in anti-Castro activity, was very close to the U.S. CIA.
This is like a movie.
Yeah.
And it will be, I'm sure.
Now, Julian Assange is a dope on any level for involving himself in anything other than WikiLeaks and what was necessary to defend the release of these 250,000 diplomatic cables from the United States that mm-hmm. have been made public with all these incredible revelations that are needed for us as citizens to make decisions about the policies our government undertakes. Now, but this is like every guy's dream. Suddenly, you're irresistible, right?
Yes.
That's, again, and part of it, it's easy for women just to say, oh, men are such dopes. I've heard you say that before.
Yeah.
But there is sort of a genetic drive here. You know, men are want to reproduce the species. I mean, that's what really mm-hmm. the sexual attraction is all about. We overlay it with love and lust. And
it's very cavemanish.
Yeah, very cavemanish. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it does. It goes back to the root. But someone said that, I don't think I can say that, but I can say it like, an aroused man, it's not exactly the way it was said, an aroused man has no conscience or common sense, right?
Yeah.
At a point where Julian Assange needed common sense really badly, because no matter, he thought, wow, man, here are these two really beautiful looking babes. Coming on mm-hmm. to me, he should have said, whoa, I don't know where this is going. I don't know who these women are. I mean, they actually were helping him, and they're setting up meetings. In fact, one of them even set up some sort of activity after the incident, which was called rape. But mm-hmm. he should have just stayed completely, completely clear of all of that, and he didn't. So, but what has happened now is twofold. We're beginning to concentrate on Julian Assange, and did he in fact involve himself in wrongful activity, illegal under Swedish law? And the other thing is, and there, some people have said there's great admirable aspects to this, the strike back against the institutions that are part of trying to limit WikiLeaks, like PayPal, which stopped payments to him, Visa and MasterCard, which also had, because there's this group called Anonymous, and they are bringing down these websites of people that have done WikiLeaks wrong all over the world. They took down the Swedish prosecutor's site. They took down a Swiss bank site. These are what they call denial of service. I might not know much about Facebook, but denial of service is when you just have thousands and thousands of computers all going on the same one at the same time. It crashes.
Oh, my gosh. Right.
So a number of my friends are really on about that, this is the first cyber war. And the little Davids are winning against the big Goliath.
Boy, I had not thought about that.
Yeah.
First cyber war.
Yeah. So, yeah. Any comments on that or WikiLeaks at all, Julian Assange? And
I updated my Norton antivirus.
And it is so important, of course, for certainly for women, but for us men as well, to safeguard women in this society, because women are always under threat of sexual assault. Most women are very, let me put it this way, there are very few women who don't have sort of an underlying caution.
Mm-hmm.
Up to a fear,
yeah,
no matter
absolutely.
Whether you're in the poorest neighborhood or the richest neighborhood.
Absolutely, yeah. Or an underlying story, a lot, you know.
Yeah, right. And I never understood, because, you know, the whole idea of everything from the golden rule to do unto mm-hmm. others mm-hmm. to existentialism, which says choose as though you were choosing for all people. Every man has a woman in his life that he holds dear or held dear.
Yeah.
And to perpetuate a culture of violence towards women or dominating women endangers the women in his life as well that he cares about. So,
yeah, I think those are good words.
So, we ought to just have moral outrage of attempting to dominate anybody.
Yeah.
This goes back to don't touch anybody unless they give you permission.
Right.
Period. But if you're not on the level of ethical commands in terms of what it should dictate behavior, you should at least think of it in personal self-interest.
Definitely. Isn't it mind-boggling when we talk about that? Because it's kind of a United States-y kind of thing, not to be Sarah Palin-y. But, but think about what happens in, for example, Iran and these countries where women are stoned to death because they looked sideways at a man or, you know, showed their hand or whatever.
Sure.
Yeah. It's really, really awful.
The WikiLeaks, is there a discussion about it? I mean, finally, Barack Obama showing some anger. You've seen that this week? He got angry twice, finally getting some fire in his belly. First, he got angry at the Democrats.
I know he did. He old Slick Willie got together.
Yeah. And he just kind of gave the presidential podium over to ex-President Clinton. He said, "I gotta." And Obama said,
"Can you just take this for a minute?
I gotta go to." Yeah, he says, "I gotta go to a Christmas party.
I gotta go to a Christmas tree lighting. Could you please take this? You did a pretty good job, other than the one thing."
Yes. And then Obama is also making calls to these world leaders all around the world, saying, "You know, I know in those WikiLeaks that came out, our diplomat said you were a doofus or that you were involved in this bad thing or that bad thing, but." And then so he really expressed all this anger, Obama did, at WikiLeaks and at Julian Assange. Me, I think it's an excellent thing because there are so many pieces of information, so much to be learned from these in terms of how we want our country to function. Are there bad things? Did it hurt us? Well, let's examine, for one thing, let's examine the pronoun us. One of the things that, I wanted to say, too, that some of the people, by the way, have, some of these politicians have said that Julian Assange ought to be declared an enemy combatant and dealt with the way you would deal with somebody from Al-Qaeda.
So in other words,
you know, extrajudicial killing is what essentially they're talking about. But you can go from the larger concept because the criticism of WikiLeaks for releasing all this said that U.S. interests all over the world have been harmed dramatically. And you go, oh, yeah, he probably did because, a lot of this stuff is secret. Well, why in the world do we have an imperial system that depends on secret negotiations and diplomacy? And why do we have interests all over the world? Who else has interests all over the world? Well, I mean, other countries are starting to. I mean, China is, pardon me, maybe Russia, but England to some extent, but nothing like the United States. Nobody else has our bases. Do other countries have bases around the world? England may have
a few. Not to that extent.
No one has 700, 800.
No.
And so to me, the whole lesson of WikiLeaks is that we shouldn't have interests all over the world that need to be protected by secrecy that inhibits American citizens from the information that that we need to make decisions. For instance, here, this one. This came out. Russia will demand that NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, drop its secret agreement to defend three Baltic states against any military attack. Well, who are they thinking about? Russia. According to confidential U.S. cables released by WikiLeaks, NATO privately decided in January to expand a defense plan for Poland to also cover NATO members Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, which border Russia.
I remember when Cheney first started, well, not first, of course, he's probably been drooling over that for a long time, but when he and old Bushy were together as a team. Yeah.
Now, what is this? What are we committed to? And why are we committed to this policy of again surrounding Russia? This is a nuclear armed country. what the United States should be involved in. I mean, I think if you brought it to the American people and say, should we have a secret agreement that we will go to war with this nuclear power if they were to attack, if Russia was to attack, say, Latvia? So we're going to have then a nuclear exchange. You know where these babies are aimed? I think, what's the city called? Begins with a D, something they just call it. Oh, yeah, Detroit. Right. So we're just wiped off the map. I mean, we are in the hands of madmen. I mean, that's when our friend Greg Palast says the title of his book, Armed Madhouse. Mm-hmm. This is what it's all about. I mean, Barack Obama does not seem like a madman. Secretary of War Gates does not seem like a madman. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton does not seem like a madwoman. But they are involved in insane policies that edge us closer to nuclear war, not having policy that would move us greatly away from it. Russia has no intention of invading Latvia. And what the United States should be doing is figuring out is, how can we assure that there is never going to be another war with a major power? I mean, forget about with any power, but with a major power. Why wouldn't we be thinking, rather than this kind of secret treaty to go to war with Russia, that we would be thinking, how can we put together a peace treaty that will disarm the United States and Russia from nuclear weapons, get them off their hair trigger ability aimed at Moscow and Detroit and Washington and L.A. and all that, instead of this insanity? Well, thank you, WikiLeaks. Thank you, Julian Assange. All right, people have...
I know that. Probably not a real popular opinion. And
I don't know. You think so?
I don't know. Alex wrote in and said, while this is possibly the first major cyber war, there are many cyber wars fought between ankle biters, teenagers, or young adults who hack minor websites to cause havoc. Yeah, it's been going on a long time.
There you go.
Thanks, Alex.
All right, here is, let's take our first caller, 313-298-WRIF. This is Stephen Stevens in Ann Arbor. Hi, Stephen. Welcome.
Hey,
you're on the air.
Nice to hear your voice and your lovely lassie who's helping you along. Very, very nice.
I'm a lassie. Oh, okay. Thank you.
Well, who would have thought it, Pete, 15 years after the web started up, that we'd be seeing the first cyber war take place. And it's everything you've ever dreamed of, Pete. It's the anarchists are fighting for truth and justice and actually winning. Isn't that great?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Do you think, though, I don't know if you heard me at the beginning, Stephen, I said I was fearful to some extent, though, that we were going to focus less on the content of these WikiLeaks, which are so important to know, and a lot more on Assange's sex life and this cyber war.
Well, from what I read in the reports, lately, any of you know, I've been lurking and reading just about everything I possibly can on Twitter about the WikiLeaks scandal and the sex scandal. It looks like there's a good chance that the judiciary system in England is going to not be that tough on Assange in the next when he next comes up for review, because the Swedish authorities have to put forward some pretty heavy-duty evidence, and there simply isn't anything there.
No, you're right. And plus, it's what he is charged with, this third-level rape, which does not involve force or violence, is not a crime in England.
Absolutely. Well, and besides which, this has grown larger than Assange. This is no longer about Assange. As you know, there are, you know, factions that are breaking off from WikiLeaks and opening their own shop. Basically, what we're seeing is a sort of revolution, and we can actually look at it. We've got a grandstand view of a world changing as we speak.
Well, you know what? Also, I'm fearful about is that people will see the contents of WikiLeaks. It seems almost that Assange has the support. It is David versus Goliath, and usually sympathies go with David. But I'm sure you would agree, Stephen, that the most important part of it all is the content. And people aren't doing much with it. They're going, oh, yeah, well, yeah, the Saudis are the biggest financiers of terror, and we're spending billions of dollars on this character.
Everybody's in shock, Peter. You know, they just don't know what to do with this. The regular media is sort of looking at this gobsmacked and goggle-eyed, wondering what to do. And, you know, they're looking furtively at the American government. Are they going to be hauled up and thrown into jail? You know, there's a bunch of politicians, the Looney Tunes, who are screaming for blood. We're at a point here where everything is sort of up in the air, and it's just so delightful.
Well, you know, things seem to be spinning out of control, and usually we think of that as a negative. I mean, things, because we want things to be in control, because in the traffic light, traffic lights work, and there's heat in our homes, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But everything, did you just say up for grabs? Was that your, did you just say that? If not.
Oh, something like that. You know.
Yeah. And I don't, if someone said, what's coming next, I would say, don't have a clue.
And I challenge anybody who says that they do know what's coming next. They are liars. No one knows what's coming next. But what we do know is coming, what isn't going to exist anymore, is the status quo.
Yeah.
It's, you know, even if they try to shut down WikiLeaks, which you know now is an absolute miserable failure, there are like hundreds and thousands of nodes now with the information that's sitting there encrypted with 250-odd-bit encryption. They're not going to get to it. No power in the world is going to get to that and shut it down.
Yeah.
It's every time they lash out, they just break this mirror into 1,000 more shards, and each shard has as much value as the entire mirror.
Yeah, at one point they said in order to stop this, they would have to shut down the
and
entire
internet. And they can't shut down the internet because that's MasterCard and Visa and the money. Everybody wants the money, you know, and you can't, the corporations will go loggerheads with the government if they start to even think about shutting down the internet. It ain't happening.
Well, Stephen, thank you so much. By the way, if you go to my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com, you can go to the WikiLeaks site and some, also there is a site for, the soldier's name, Manning, what's his first name?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's there as well. But thank you very much for joining us.
Do I get a present?
A present. We'll come up with something.
Look under your tree. Thank you, Stephen. Stephen was in Ann Arbor and far away again. Here's Linda in Lansing. Linda, hi. You're on the air. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I've been just caught your. I just tuned in to your conversation, so I don't know everything you've talked about so far, but. You know, I was interested in what you said in terms of response to WikiLeaks. And I've been working on a Department of Peace proposal for some years. Julie knows me.
Oh.
Hey, Linda.
Hey,
I recognize that voice.
There you go. So I guess my issue is that having done that and working with people around the country that have done that, it's clear to me at this point, I don't think it's a new thing to me, I guess, but we don't educate people, even within our own families and with our own communities, to be prepared to respond to something like this. We don't even educate people to exercise democratic values in this country. You know, and so to expect that from people, I mean, I'm disappointed as anybody. By the response, but it just seems to me that if you create rules where you can spend as much money, which was, you know, addressed earlier, but if you can spend as much money as you want so that people don't vote based on their own experience, what they already know, because enough ads have been put in front of them that they start acting like lemmings and responding.
Wait, let me back you up though, Linda. You said you were disappointed in the response. What do you mean by that? Into what?
Well,
what response
I mean, in terms of people don't have the wherewithal or the understanding to go deeper in the reaction. There's a lot of reactionary level of behavior by the society, and actually, we've trained people
mm-hmm.
now. Children are trained with television and games, and I mean the military used games before they you know, after Vietnam, that was a big expenditure, is to get children into war games with, you know.
And they're, well, they're into them now, big time. Yeah.
The problem with response, and people always say that, you know, nobody does anything. We look all around the world how the average people are responding to the attempt of different governments, the Irish government, the English, the French, the Italians, the Greeks, to solve this worldwide economic problem that was generated, caused by the elites, to make the average person pay for it out of their pocket. People have been responding all around the world. We don't have the forms. Most of it is, and I was saying this last week, either all of this has been via unions that have been leading these anti-austerity demonstrations and strikes and what have you, or it's already in place, like in England, where people were it really got out of hand. Did you see that, Jalene, where Prince Charles
and Camilla, there was a big protest going on, students,
because now what had previously been paid for by the government, now the students were going to have to pay for their own tuition, mm-hmm. or good parts of it, and they surrounded their car and they're yelling what every royal fears the most. They were yelling, "Off with their heads."
Oh, yeah, Camilla, that was a frightening picture. You could tell she was scared out of her mind.
That's on my website as well. Give me a final statement there, Linda.
I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, reactionaryism, whether it's from the left or the right, doesn't work. It just doesn't work. It never will. It's, to me, you know, the fear and violence are if we keep going down that path, I don't care what your goal is, you know, that will not get us to the point in this particular time where we are on a timeline right now. I don't believe that that's going to, as much as I sometimes get reactionary myself from the left, it doesn't work. And so what I guess I'm saying is we need to find a way to communicate with our neighbors and within our own communities, a way to, for them to look at their own experience and bring it to their thinking about their leadership, about what's going on around them in the world.
I think that's well said.
Yes,
absolutely.
Definitely.
All right, Linda, thank you very much. Wilhelm Reich, go look that up, like Third Reich. So Wilhelm Reich, he has this little parable about how two masons are building a wall. And they're, you know, cooperating.
Mm-hmm.
Then suddenly, this is back in the early 1930s, and suddenly one learns one's a communist and one's a Nazi, and they start fighting.
Right. Yeah. It was all fine until
then. If you're on hold, stay there, and we'll get right to you. Peter Werby, Jalene Jordan. Well, here's the information. This is what we pay the guy for.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this. Wow.
Yeah, I know. Isn't this wild?
Yeah, it's really growing.
You think I didn't notice?
I'm just, you know, I'm speechless. Wow, your bush looks great.
I couldn't be happier.
Your buds are growing. They're getting huge, and the aroma is amazing.
Well, they say if you want bigger buds, you've got to talk to the grow wizards.
Indoor Garden Superstore. I guess we should have gone there ages ago.
Indoor Garden Superstore. They're number one in growing knowledge with over 25 years actual indoor growing experience. These grow wizards know what they're doing. They have what you need to be a successful grower with hydroponics kits and setups for the novice to the professional. Plus, the best prices around. Come see for yourself. With their large showroom and massive inventory, they have what you need to get your best results ever. Mention WRIF and receive 10% off your purchase. Open 6 days a week, Indoor Garden Superstore, 2570 Dixie Highway, just north of Telegraph in Waterford. Call 877-22-HYDRO or visit indoorgardensuperstore.com.
Happy holidays. Welcome to REI. How can I help you?
I am looking for those natural motion multi-sport
men's Vibram Five Fingers KSO shoes.
Yes, and an ultra-warm
the North Face Cat's Meow sleeping bag.
Exactly, and I don't know what to get for
an REI gift card.
Well, that was an easy holiday shopping season.
We know what you need and have all the outdoor gifts they'll love. And with REI's 100% satisfaction guarantee and knowledgeable staff, you can be confident with each and every gift you buy. For more information, visit REI or REI.com. REI, find out.
Did you know that 65% of U.S. homes are under-insulated? So don't miss Lowe's insulation event going on right now. Purchase qualifying in-stock Johns Manville formaldehyde free fiberglass insulation and get a Lowe's gift card worth up to $200 via mail-in rebate. Plus, insulation purchases before the end of the year qualify for a tax credit up to $1,500. So head over to Lowe's now or shop at Lowe's.com. Experience. Lowe's. Let's build something together. Offer valid now through December 13th. Some restrictions apply. See store for details. Valid in U.S. only.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Betsy, look at these sweaters. They'd look amazing on our girls.
Maybe.
Come on, what's wrong?
Suzanne, I have no business being in the store. I should not be shopping. Things are really tight. We're behind on our mortgage.
Listen, Bill and I had the same problem, and we got some really great counseling, and it was free. I'm going to email you the information.
If you even think you may be in danger of foreclosure, call the National Foundation for Credit Counseling today at 866-687-6322 or visit mortgagehelpnow.org. Public service from the NFCC.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older, listen to this. You may be eligible to receive tax-free income and eliminate your mortgage payments. It's all through a government-insured program called a reverse mortgage. And now you can get a free guide that tells you how. It's offered by One Reverse Mortgage, and it's yours free by calling 1-888-400-0901. The federal government created reverse mortgages specifically to make your retirement easier. They can help you stay in your home and turn your home's equity into tax-free income. You'll never make another mortgage payment. Find out more about this government program and get your free guide. Pick up the phone right now and call 1-888-400-0901. Find out why millions of Americans are considering reverse mortgages. There's no obligation. Equal housing lender not available in all states. Call now. 1-888-400-0901. That's 1-888-400-0901.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back to another segment. We have some open lines for you at 313-298-WRIF.
Yes, 313-298-9743. We had a couple of great phone calls already. We'll take yours on anything.
Yeah, and we're talking about, WikiLeaks. I think it's a good thing, good for democracy. Is there a downside of it? Well, to the extent that there is a downside, it's what I said earlier. The United States should not be involved worldwide at the level that we have seen through these WikiLeaks. Here's this one. This is amazing. Leaked cables show Vatican tensions and diplomacy with U.S. Recently released diplomatic cables show the Vatican fighting to shore up its eroding control over sexual abuse scandals in the United States and Ireland. But that's not even what the important part of this article is. The cables were obtained by WikiLeaks and made available to the New York Times and other news organizations. They do not appear to contain any bombshells about the Vatican, but they provide a telling glimpse of how American diplomats often rely on Roman Catholic Church's worldwide network of prelates for intelligence.
Prelates?
Yeah, the bishops and the archbishops. And yeah, it looks like prelates.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I mean, this is a revelation and a scandal of the First Order. I mean, one of the things that one expects from religious leaders, I know, I'm joking, that they're not involved in the mundane politics of the world. Anybody out there think, though, that, boy, this is horrible that these leaks have been
wiki,
whatever you'd call it.
Hey, Obama wanted transparency in his government. Well, he got it. It wasn't him doing it.
Was I saying last week about Wolf Blitzer? Weren't we talking about him?
We were.
Yeah, he was saying, here's this newsman saying, when are these people going to be stopped? I'm getting too much information to give to the American people.
What journalism didn't want this?
He didn't say the last part of what he said.
Right.
Here's Kenneth in Tennessee via Detroit. You're listening in Tennessee, Kenneth?
Yes, sir. I'm down here in a little town called Waverly, Tennessee. Originally born and raised there in Detroit, and come down a while back with the whole Saturn issue.
Oh, well, yeah. Go ahead, John.
I just want to tell you, first and foremost, I respect a lot of what you've said and respect a lot of your opinions.
Thank you.
The first thing that hit me, though, where our opinions differ, is you were talking about how the U.S. and Russia need to work together in more arms treaties.
Yeah.
I believe, if I heard you correctly, in backing down our nuclear arms and such.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the biggest mistake we can make.
Why?
Honestly. And you probably made 95% of Dearborn, you know, have the most pleasurable day they've ever had by saying that.
Why?
I mean, if we back down, even if it's just compared with Russia, that is opening the doors for attacks like we have never seen.
Why are you including Dearborn?
What's
in
Dearborn
this?
On this?
Oh, that was just an old little inside joke from the family there, with a lot of the Muslim.
That's horrible.
What do Muslims have to do with
friends in Dearborn? He's talking about you. This is not cool.
Oh, this is Iran. Okay. Well, you know, listen, let me tell you this, Kenneth. That aside probably cost you a little bit of airtime and cred. Yeah.
Were doing pretty well.
Let's say you and I, Kenneth, we're going to make a business deal. You don't know me very well, or you've even heard that Werby's kind of a shady character, but there's some mutual interest that we have in working some stuff out so we could work together. So, but you're probably a pretty smart guy, and you could figure, well, we could make a deal where if I started doing something shady, doing something wrong, breaking the contract, you would be wise to it, eh? I mean, I hate to argue by analogy, but, you know, things are verifiable. And Russia, just like the Soviet Union, never had any interest in an arms race. It was the United States that promoted it, promulgated it, advanced it. What have you? And the Soviets were always terrified that the United States, who they thought were run by crazy people, willing to start a nuclear war, and were always just playing catch up. And all of this is in these release cables. All of this is in stuff that came out over after the Cold War. But go ahead.
Yeah, but truthfully, my point is if we start working on these arms deals and backing down, it does make me worry about North Korea. It makes me worry about Iran.
Well, it's not about backing down necessarily.
No, First off, this has got to be done worldwide. And what can you do with, like, Iran? What can you do with North Korea? Well, I'm not real sure right now. We do know that weapon systems are almost always used eventually. We've been pretty lucky so far. But here's what I'm talking about. I mean, you were talking about my opinion, which is fine. But what I was talking about primarily, maybe I shouldn't even have thrown that second part into it, was that the United States, that we've learned through these WikiLeaks, has a secret treaty with Latvia and Estonia and Lithuania in case they were attacked, that the United States would come to its aid. And this, and the only thing that that anyone can imagine, it would be Russia, who has invaded those countries before. So essentially, this secret treaty, aren't they supposed to be done through the Senate, advice and consent of the Senate? I mean, this is all gone. So I guess what I'm saying is we owe WikiLeaks a vote of thanks. All right. Thank you very much, Kenneth. I actually thought it was a friend of mine. I thought it was the other way. But my Tennessee friend is in Detroit. Here's Bob in Macomb. Bob, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. There are open lines. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to know, your opinion on all the people that are spying, in different countries and what their outcome is going to be because of this WikiLeaks thing.
I don't know. No one has made the argument yet that anybody was going to be jeopardized.
How can you say that?
Well, because what these were diplomatic cables. These were conversations between people in other countries and the home base. So it wasn't like saying so-and-so.
It wasn't secret spy information. I mean, these were actual cables.
Yeah, and actually, this stuff is not top secret either. It's something like I've heard anywhere from 1 million to 3.5 million people had access to it. So there's private manning.
That's good to know.
Yeah, yeah. So these are mostly just embarrassing.
Let's say two-thirds of it was gibberish, right?
No, I don't know. But okay, go ahead.
Two-thirds of it was gibberish.
Yeah.
But then you're putting up, you know, this guy is putting people's lives online saying, oh, this is what's going on in this country and, you know, embarrassing things. There's going to be a lot of repercussions going on here.
Well, I would hope they'd be political. I mean, do you think we should have a secret government? I mean, that kind of confounds democracy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But in the same token, you have to have certain things that are kept under wraps.
Yeah, well, the problem is that the elite, the people that are running things, get to make those designations. So they go, well, you know, maybe the people in the United States are a little upset if we, if they learn that we have a secret military treaty. I mean, this is something like out of World War One or the 19th century.
And they,
but I hear you,
Bob.
Thank you very much.
One of the articles I read, Peter, says there were no details of security measures at any one of these sites.
Yeah,
listed,
right.
And that it really is not a major security breach at all.
Here was one, where is all this? That there was this list of all these different sites that were critical, as they said. Oh, yeah, here. List of facilities vital to U.S. security leak. Now, this could get along the lines of what Bob was saying, you would think. Mm-hmm. A long list of key facilities around the world that the U.S. describes as vital to its national security has been released by WikiLeaks. I would go back to the statement I made earlier. Why does our country have sites and key facilities around the world that we feel are vital to our national security? I don't get this.
World domination.
And I'm trying to think, because they're not all what you think. They're not all like little spy setups to where we can look on Al-Qaeda or something like that. They are a number of BAE system plants involved in joint weapons programs with the Americans. Oh, this is from an English thing. A marine engineering firm in Edinburgh, which is said to be critical for nuclear-powered submarine. I mean, We've got to bring this all back home, is what it's all about. I mean, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't have, during the late 1930s, there was this political trend, mostly Republicans, that were called isolationists, that they didn't want to be involved in world affairs, they didn't want to be involved in world wars, right? And, of course, it all evaporated when the Japanese attacked us. But there was a desire to create sort of like Fortress America. And that's not what I'm advocating. I'm saying that what we've got to investigate, how can we make peace? Now, you know, it doesn't mean like one of the callers said, we got to back off, back down, give up, give in, anything like that. This extraordinarily powerful country, the most sophisticated weaponry in the world, the largest army in the world, a war budget that is
the largest war budget in the world.
And greater than, I forgot what, all the rest of them combined.
Yeah, it was something like that.
Great numbers of them and top 20 countries. So it's not like, we're going to say, okay, we give up, you know. We say, look, this everything's going wrong. The whole world is just falling apart economically, politically. This is the context in which wars begin. And it's not going to be guys slogging across trenches anymore. It's going to be like that and boom, it's gone. We're gone.
Droids and not the phone.
Yeah.
As Stephen, your friend who called in earlier, said, we've been gobsmacked and goggle-eyed.
Here's Adam in Brighton. Adam, hi. It's Peter and Jeline. You're on the air. Thank you for joining us.
How are you?
We're good.
This is really my first time calling. I've listened to your show for a while.
Well, thank you and welcome.
This WikiLeaks thing is a little out of control, I think, as far as the media is concerned. I mean, the guy spread some things and put some things out there and cyberspace, and you know, it's really becoming a bigger deal than it should be. I agree with you that we shouldn't be keeping secret treaties with everyone else, but you know, the fact is, it's probably a reality for most countries.
Well, not I don't think that there's very many countries that have all of their diplomatic interchanges shown to the public. That's for sure. But no one has a worldwide system that it feels is necessary to its national security or national interest. And these large extended empires, if you go back anywhere to the 19th century with Britain and France, or you go back as far as Rome, when you get empires that really extend its works, if you will, it doesn't last. And I think we're in a much, much more precarious position than any of us know. But, you know, we will see. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Say, Greg and Phil, hold on. I see you want to talk about some things, and these relate directly. But I just want to bring up something else. So, guys, hold on. The rest of you can call 313-298-WRIF to introduce things. Put your hand on your wallet, because they're coming for your money.
I'm bigger than you. I'm higher in the food chain.
Where's the rich? What are they going to say?
Get in my belly.
So here's your choice.
Eat the rich. There's only one thing I'm very good for. Eat the rich. I think one bite now, I'll be back tomorrow.
Mmm. Tasty.
All right, thank you, Stephanie, for that big belch. She claims she's not her. Thanks for putting that together. All right, I want to get Paul and Greg and Phil on the air, so hang on. I just want to introduce another key topic for tonight and get some people commenting on that. And that's this deal that President Obama worked out with congressional Republicans on Monday that would extend the Bush-era tax cuts to all income levels, including the ultra-rich. I mean, you've heard all this before, if you've been keeping track of it at all, that not allowing the tax breaks that Bush gave his rich buddies, along with the Iraq War, the two things have just sunk the economy. I mean, that was the context for it. And if you were to end the Bush-era tax cuts for the ultra-wealthy, that's not, you know, 2% of us, right? The 98% of us would have our tax levels unchanged. That this is going to cost about $700 billion. This is going to create more of a deficit.
Yeah, think of the things we could pay. All the righties and the baggers who are bitching about, where's the money coming from? Well, it could come right from there.
Yeah, and now all of it is going to come from the deficit. It's all going to be borrowed. It's going to cost about $900 billion over the next 2 years. This is what the congressional Republicans have demanded of Bush. Excuse me. I'm getting confused, aren't I?
I wonder
why.
That was crazy.
This is what they demanded of Obama, that in order to extend unemployment benefits, to the people that were ruined by the Bush recession.
And you know who you are.
Yeah. That they would hold these people hostage. In fact, Obama said, I've said before and I felt that the middle class tax cuts were being held hostage to the high end tax cuts. He said, well, since when do we negotiate with hostage takers? But terrorists. The Republicans are these economic terrorists, and they are trying to, I mean, they have a whole scheme. I mean, one of the things, as the deficit grows, now, so they've guaranteed by this demand that their rich pals, the class in society, the 2% of the people they represent, I mean, there's a lot of other people that say, oh, well, yeah, I'm a Republican, I'm a conservative. Well, these policies only solely benefit the rich, the 2% that the Republicans
are. They're happy to have you along for the ride.
Yeah, you're their cannon fodder. Because they couldn't do it without you. They're only 2%. They thank you. They wouldn't have anything to do with you socially or anything like that because they think you are beneath them.
Yeah.
And you are. We are. We are. Because they are the ultra rich. So what's going to happen? So there's another almost $1 trillion over the next 2 years that the Republicans demanded that the deficit take on. Well, you know what this is all about? And I can't believe that Obama doesn't realize this, unless he's got some weird scheme up his something. And that is, they're going to say, you know what? Things are really going down the drain. We're going to have to cut some stuff. We're going to make those tax cuts permanent, but we're going to have to maybe really cut back on Social Security. We're going to have to get rid of the minimum wage. We're going to have to, we're going to have to start cutting back on Medicare. We're going to have to get rid of all those aid to education programs and all that. So the Republicans, they, through their stupidity, through the ignorance of Reaganomics and with its apex in the Bush tax cuts and his unfunded wars, that were unneeded and unnecessary. They're going to drive us deeper into debt to be an excuse to get rid of these programs that have been with us for 70 years or so. All right. So some comments on that. 313-298-WRIF. Oop. Well, we got to take a break, but hey, Paul and Phil, hang on and we'll get you right after the break.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Droid.
Droid does speed. Droid does power. Now Droid does even more with a dynamic armada of three devices, here to ensure a successful holiday season. Introducing the Droid Pro, a fortress of data to secure your top secret documents, like your holiday shopping list. The Droid 2 Global, explore a universe of free apps on the fastest mobile processor of its clan. And the 4.3-inch screen of the Droid X puts the power to summon movies and games into your hand. Once a single device, Droid has bred a family, here to empower everyone in yours.
Now get a Droid X or Droid 2 Global by Motorola for $199.99 and get any phone free, each after up to a $100 mail-in rebate debit card. Visit any Verizon store, droiddoes.com, or call 1-800-256-4646. All phones require new 2-year activation. Each smartphone requires data pack. Free phone must be of equal or lesser value. Early termination and other fees apply. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com.
Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you don't have coverage, listen to this. AccuQuote can help save you up to 70% on a term life policy that's right for you. Pick up the phone and call AccuQuote at 800-654-2075. AccuQuote has helped hundreds of thousands of people save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how. AccuQuote monitors hundreds of top-rated life insurance products so you can get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. Rates for women are even lower. A short 5-minute call is all it takes. Call AccuQuote for a free life insurance quote at 800-654-2075. Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Find out how much you can save on life insurance. Call AccuQuote for your free quote. 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call. 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back to our second hour at 1 a.m. Please join me for a pre-recorded. Actually, it's probably an unnecessary prefix.
Just a recorded interview
that I did with Wendell Potter. Wendell Potter led the health industry's war on Michael Moore's film Sicko. And he actually...
Wendell, he's coming clean.
Yeah, Wendell Potter apologized to Michael Moore. He was the head of communications for the Cigna Health Group.
Mm-hmm.
This is an incredible book, incredible interview. And Wendell Potter was on the Keith Olbermann show with Michael. And he apologized to him.
That's wonderful.
For doing this. Yeah, this book's called...
Good for him. Deadly, he can sleep at night.
Deadly Spin. Also, Nancy Fulbry, she's written a book called Saving State U, Why We Must Fix Public Higher Education. If you're facing big costs and all that, you'll really want to check this out. All right, we were talking to some extent, we were talking about WikiLeaks. We're also talking about this new tax deal that Obama rolled over for the Republicans. I don't understand this. I mean, there's, what is there, like 58 or 59 Democratic senators. The Democrats have the vast majority in the House. They will till January 3rd. The president is a Democrat, and he gives away the store to the Republican.
And the only Democrat that could muster any kind of cojones was Bernie Sanders, and he filibustered for how many hours?
8 hours. Yeah.
That's the only one.
Yeah. By the way, it does give more benefits to long-term unemployed, and it cuts payroll taxes. So there actually will be the Social Security payroll tax will be reduced by 6.2%. But this, again, makes people kind of, whoa, wait a minute, isn't Social Security
part of that, right?
Little people think it's shaky. It's really not. For a family earning $50,000 a year with this new payroll tax reduction, might get another $1,000. And this is, in a way, sort of a stimulus that the Republicans agreed to. But they want the United States to have more and more debt, more and more deficit, because what this means is they will then begin to attack all of these programs. They are very crafty and very evil, and Barack Obama is not up to the task.
I guess not.
Yeah. You know what it's up to, folks? Have you seen what's happening in Ireland? Have you seen what happened in Iceland, in Greece,
England,
in France, in England, all of these places? The people have taken charge. They say, you're not doing this to us. The elite did this. They're going to pay, not us.
I think so many people are so afraid in this country of speaking out, in this political climate. But you shouldn't be.
But also, we don't have an opposition party. We don't have strong unions that have led the fight back the way they have in other countries.
True.
That, like these demonstrations against raising student tuition in England, they were led by these huge student organizations that are nationwide there.
Yeah.
So they had 50,000 people out in the streets, 50,000 students and supporters saying that you're not shifting the burden onto the average person.
I hope it works. Yeah. I hope it's effective.
Yeah. Well, they actually lost in France. I mean, they had a general strike in France, and still they were able to. Yeah, they lost. But wouldn't it be nice at least to say we had some resistance rather than, yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Right.
Here's Paul in Sterling Heights. Paul, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I have to say, personally, I admire Julian Assange.
Yeah.
I believe that Julian Assange is as much anti-tyranny as any of the founding fathers were.
Okay.
And when I blog to defend him, I raise a name, and it leaves my cheap labor conservative friends speechless. And when they have no comment, I know I've hit close to the bullseye. And two words, Peter.
Right.
No.
Valerie Plame.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Valerie Plame.
Let's remind people that Valerie Plame, this is another crime that the somebody in the Bush administration should have been in jail for, and that was Vice President Cheney, who ordered the outing of the CIA agent Valerie Plame, who has an autobiography and also
a movie.
A movie, if I had a memory, I could.
Fair
Game.
Yeah.
Have you seen that, Paul?
No, I haven't yet.
Yeah, check it out. Yeah.
But the whole thing is, nobody said anything about her contact in Iran, where she was working. When she was outed, what happened to her contact?
You know, it's not clear. In the movie, I don't hate to give some of this away, but I guess we kind of have to. It shows sort of dire consequences because the attempt of the filmmaker was to indict Cheney and the Bush administration for doing this to a CIA agent. But it's not clear that anybody suffered any real consequences, at least, and I'm saying this in a real authoritative manner. But let me say that I'm only getting this through not WikiLeaks, but what? Wikipedia.
Wikipedia.
Wikipedia. If you go to Valerie Plame, P-L-A-M-E, and you go through her case, according to most people, that there wasn't anybody that actually got harmed. But there was a lot of what Valerie Plame was involved, as you're indicating correctly, Paul, that she was involved in intelligence in terms of trying to find out what Iran was up to. And what Cheney did in ordering her to be outed was breaking U.S. law. Why these guys aren't in jail, way beyond me. All right, thank you very much. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Fred in Detroit. Hi, Fred. You're on the air.
Hi. I heard you mention earlier about the cost of defense and having bases all over the place.
Yeah.
And I was just going to say that earlier tonight on 60 Minutes, when John Boehner wasn't busy blubbering.
Oh, it was awful.
And taking Obama to task for saying that he was holding the Congress hostage and all. They talked about Brazil as an up-and-coming economy and how they practically have no army. They don't waste money on that kind of thing.
Yeah, they said, the president-elect said, we're not going to the war.
1870.
He said, why would we go to the war when we could go to the beach?
Right.
And I thought, damn, I loved that. But let's talk about Boehner. This guy needs medication.
Well, wait. Well, wait a minute. First time, Boehner needs
medication. Don't you agree?
And
yeah.
Well, Fred, you know, it is Boehner because I always say two things. One, Hohner harmonicas, the famous German harmonica maker. They don't call it Hainer. They call it Hohner. And also, let me see.
Yeah, what is the line?
Okay, did you go to school in Detroit, Fred?
Oh, yeah.
So did I. And we learned in English class that when two vowels go walking, what? The first one does the talking.
Okay.
So it's Boehner.
For those who don't know who we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Who's now going to be the Speaker of the House. And what was he, Fred, what was he crying about?
Well, he cries about everything, evidently.
It was because the kids. It's the kids.
He had a hard life coming up.
Yeah, I guess
nobody else did.
No one else did. Poor little guy. 12 kids in this little house. I mean, at least he had a house. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Fred. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That guy's a wreck.
Yeah.
Boehner is a wreck.
And that other guy, the guy I'm back to not mentioning, not giving publicity to these right-wingers and these teabaggers, but that guy with the chalkboard, he cries all the time, too.
What is
with him?
They need meds or to up their meds.
Yeah,
and I'm not
like
making
that.
Fun of
no.
that kind of thing because I think it is very important for some people. But these guys have no control over their emotions. Or maybe, you know, maybe I'm just so used to men not crying. I don't know. What is it,
yeah,
Peter?
Yeah.
Especially Republicans.
Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe they are. Hey, by the way, one of the things about the teabaggers are all going crazy, and none of us liked really, is that it's, Stephanie writes, it's bad acting.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah, right.
On the part of the chalkboard guy. I think Boehner really has some issues.
Okay. And he's orange.
Yeah, he's got that.
That man tan.
Year round man tan.
Yeah, that stuff you rub on and you get yeah. all right, so all of us were upset about the fact that these big banks, insurance companies, and what have you were bailed out, and except that the baggers, the tea baggers, thought you know that shouldn't be done. And to the point, I almost sympathize, except I didn't think it would be really a good idea to let the entire economy collapse at this time. But they were saying how badly it, increased the debt, of course, and that we, the taxpayers, had to pay for it. Well, what they aren't talking much about now is that after all is said and done, taxpayers are going to make, that's you and me, are going to make a $12 billion profit on the government's $45 million bailout of Citigroup. How about that?
What?
Yeah, the Treasury Department said late Monday that it had struck a deal to sell its remaining holdings in Citigroup common stock, about 2.4 billion shares, with the proceeds of the sale, price, blah, 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 and will have realized $57 billion on its bailout package for the big bank. So we, the taxpayers, and I don't know who initiated this, could have very well have been Bush. I mean, he didn't hesitate, of course. These were his people, the rich bankers and all that. Let's go down to Monroe and pick up Ralph. Ralph, hi, you're on the air. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF.
Yeah, my comment is I'm one of these taxpayers that you're talking about. You know, I make well over 200 grand a year.
Uh-huh.
I'm in transportation, you know, deliver from so many different companies.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find out, you know, why is it that I got to pay for this unemployment and all this other crap with my tax dollars. What I'm needing to find out.
What do you think we ought to do? Just say too bad? Just, you know, well, here's part of it, Ralph. There's a couple of things to it. I mean, if you don't come at it from the humanitarian and compassion angle, there's if you take the billions of dollars that are now being given to people that are experiencing long-term unemployment, the retail sector will probably suffer some extraordinarily serious damage.
True. But now I'm looking at here, why can't we tax the people that's across the seas that where our money's actually going? They should be paying us tax money into this country. We actually give these guys, you know, so much tax breaks. I don't understand that.
Yeah? You're saying you make over $200,000, though?
Yeah, I make over $200,000. A little bit. Well, sometimes, you know, it ranges from year to year for me.
Well, you know, if you're making like $200,000, I think your taxes would go up like $400. I mean, listen, the $200,000, $250,000 is the taxes that would raise is fairly minimal. So, I mean, if we make people happy, we could say, okay, we'll make it $300,000. where the real tax benefits would come and why it's going to cost the United States Treasury $700 billion that's not going to be collected in tax revenues is from these absolute ultra-rich people who have $200,000 in their pocket for spending money, you know?
Oh, wow. And that's just like I said, it's just crazy. I mean, I'm going all across the country, and I'm spending my money, and I'm being taxed everywhere I go. It just don't make any sense to me. I mean, I got truckers out here right now. They'll tell you, you know, they were talking about doing a shutdown across America. I mean, because we're the elite people that's out here that keeps America employed and doing whatever, just keep America moving, period.
Uh-huh.
And these guys are talking about, you know, we've had enough.
Enough. Well, listen, if we had our economic priorities in a manner that made some sense for everybody that's making $20,000 a year up to people like you, Ralph, who sometimes makes $200,000, we probably could almost eliminate the taxes in that category. Because there is so much extraordinary wealth in this country, and it just winds up not doing anything. I mean, it sounds like you and the people that work for you work pretty hard. But the real money really circulates among people that don't do much work at all. And they don't use the money at all. It's not like, you know, the tens of billions of dollars some of these guys have that they actually put it to work. They don't invest it in creating new jobs. They invest it in stocks, hoping to make more billions of dollars, which won't be used and all that. But I take your opinion. Thank you so much, Ralph. I appreciate your calls. Call.
Yeah, and we'll take any of your calls, 313-298-WRIF or 9743, as I like to say here on the show.
Now, we were talking about the importance of the WikiLeaks and how it gives us an insight into what this country has done. If you're living in a democratic society, you're supposed to have as much information as possible in order to make decisions. I mean, who to vote for or what kind of legislation to agitate for through whatever, you know, different groups and, you know, all that. If we don't have the full information, we sometimes are acting on incomplete information or bad information or no information. And then we just kind of get whipped around by, I don't know, whatever being used to whip us up, right?
True.
And usually it's not what it's really all about. For instance, and this is not a WikiLeak at all. This just came out. This is, let me do the math, 65-year-old stuff. Just came out. After World War II, American counterintelligence recruited former Gestapo officers, SS veterans, and Nazi collaborators to an even greater extent than had been previously disclosed, and helped many of them avoid, are you ready for this? Help them avoid prosecution or look the other way when they escaped, according to thousands of newly declassified documents.
Well, I just couldn't believe this one.
Yeah. I mean, don't you think that would have been interesting to know for our parents or our grandparents or something to for us to then to have evaluated in terms of what we would like to see?
Here the survivors, are the Nazis. You think the survivors would like to have known that? Yeah. And now there are still survivors.
Here are the biggest criminals, or among the biggest criminals in world history, and they are being aided and abetted by American counterintelligence because they're trying to use them against the Soviets. You go, well, maybe that makes some sense. You got to make some compromises here. But you know what? There's a little bit of difference. There's a little bit of difference. At that point, the Soviet Union was not involved, or it wasn't seen as something that had to be stopped. That, I mean, certainly the whole West and all the capitalist nations were always hostile towards the Soviet Union and dreamed about bringing them back, bringing Russia and back into the capitalist orbit, to be sure. But they said the Soviet Union, with a presence in Eastern Europe, remember, they fought their way there. Essentially, the Soviet Red Army won World War II in Europe. The United States was there, did some heroic stuff, no doubt about it. But the real battles that destroyed the Wehrmacht were done by the Red Army. Let's see, settling scores with Germans or German collaborators, the Soviet Union was settling scores with Germans or German collaborators seemed less pressing. In some cases, it appeared counterproductive, according to this government report that's just come out. Yeah, do you think that maybe the Russians were a little PO'd? Yeah? I mean, you know how many...
Perhaps.
You know how many Russians died? I mean, the deaths in World War II, all the United States deaths, I think, were about 450,000. The Russians lost 20 million people.
Oh, my gosh.
20 million people. And so they're, a little pissed off.
Yeah.
To be sure.
You know how a lot of people here in this country after 9/11 said,
yeah,
we will never forget. Well, you know what? They haven't forgotten. Hmm.
There's this report. It's called Hitler's Shadow, Nazi War Criminals, U.S. Intelligence in the Cold War. Hitler's Shadow adds a further dimension to a separate Justice Department history of American Nazi hunting operations, which concluded that American intelligence officials created a safe haven in the United States for certain former Nazis. You ready for this?
Safe haven.
Yeah. Like early reports generated by the group, that this one paints a grim portrait of bureaucracy, turf wars, and communication gaps among intelligence agencies. It also details blatantly cynical, self-interested tactical decisions by allied governments and a general predisposition that some war crimes by former Nazis and their collaborators should be overlooked because the suspects could be transformed into valuable assets. Right? They talk about all these. Klaus Barbie, probably the famous, the butcher of Lyon. Anton Mahler, who as a Gestapo anti-communist agent interrogated Hans Scholl, the German underground student leader who was beheaded in 1943. Mahler also served in Eisengruppe B in occupied Belarus, which was blamed for the execution of more than 45,000 people, mostly Jews. This admission on his own U.S. military government questionnaire in 1947 was ignored or overlooked by U.S. and West German authorities. American agents recommended Mahler and former Nazis be protected from politically inspired criminal proceedings in Germany. Are you ready for that? And it goes on and on with any number of other Nazis.
Makes me think about the other article that we both looked at this week about Nixon, these extended conversations were just released this last week. Richard Nixon making disparaging remarks about, I mean, we already knew this, but this is something. Jews, blacks, Italian-Americans, and Irish-Americans. Get this one. This is what his thing about the Irish. First, he says, the Jews have certain traits. The Irish have certain, for example, the Irish can't drink. What you always have to remember with the Irish is that they get mean. Virtually every Irish I've known gets mean when he drinks, particularly the real Irish.
Now, this is Nixon.
This guy.
This is Nixon. And, you know, you would think if he was secretly being taped, this was this great expose. He was secretly taping himself and everyone else.
What a dumb Yeah. And then a moment later, Nixon returned it to his hot button group, the Jews.
He hated the Jews.
Yeah, he said the Jews are just a very aggressive and abrasive and obnoxious personality. I mean, this guy, and he was president of the United States.
Yeah. And it's so astounding that he would say such injudicious things. I mean, he has Billy Graham in there talking about you got to control the Jews.
His buddy Billy. And look, listen to this one. Let's see. Kissinger, the emigration of Jews from the Soviet Union is not an objective of American foreign policy. And if they put Jews into gas chambers in the Soviet Union, it's not an American concern, maybe a humanitarian concern. I know, Nixon responded, we can't blow up the world because of it.
Well, you would have thought, see, Nixon would get all these racists and anti-Semites and what have you in his office. So you would think when they would make some anti-Semitic remark or some, you know, anti-black or something, you would say, you would think he would say, oh, well, I don't agree with that. I think that we have to judge all people.
At least fake it.
Fake it, because he's being recorded. Why in the world would he set up this recording device and then say things that he must realize would make him look as bad and stupid and evil as Nixon actually was?
Well, maybe he's such a nasty racist that he forgot that he was taping himself because he was in such a fervor of racism, you know.
Nixon, in terms of modern presidents, the approval rating for Nixon was, he was last at 29%. I mean, so there's 29% of Americans who think that that he was a great president.
Really? Who are these people? Yeah. Please, maintain a safe distance from me.
Kennedy remains the highest rated president in modern history, and Reagan comes in second.
Yeah.
Reagan screwed up everything.
I know.
I don't get it.
People, he really snowed a lot of people. A lot of people are easily snowed.
Yes. Somebody called back and says, watch the History Channel so you'll be more informed. I got to tell you, Bob.
Read a book, maybe.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get too informed watching the History. If you're getting your information through the History Channel.
Bit limited.
Very limited.
Sorry.
It's all because that stuff, by its very nature, has to be 101.
It absolutely does. If that's all you're getting for the rest of your life is the 101. Sorry for you. Winston Smith wrote in, Peter, you say you think Obama might have something up his sleeve? He has something up his sleeve, all right. It's his obligation to the corporatists who sponsored his campaign. Or do you believe he raised all of that money from small donations? Obama isn't concerned with a second term. He has an agenda, and it was what is best for you and me, Angeline.
I think he does want a second term, to be sure. He certainly doesn't want to go the route of either Jimmy Carter or Lyndon Johnson, either first off being defeated or secondly being so unpopular, realizing that he, as Johnson did in 1968, that he couldn't be reelected.
Yeah.
So the point being, what I was talking about, Winston, was that could this be a strategy, thinking that by the time 2 years rolls around, that it's going to be self-evident how bad these tax cuts are. He's like Clinton. He brings Clinton in there. Clinton is the guy that put across the Republican NAFTA. They think the majority of people that are going to vote for this tax break for the wealthy are the Republicans. And the Republicans are real. What's wrong with this picture? Obama makes a deal. He compromises with hostage takers, in his own words, when he has the majority still, and all of the Republicans are very happy, and all the Democrats are very unhappy. What's the message here?
Roll over.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. Here's Scott in Farmington. Scott, hi. It's Peter and Jalene. You're on WRIF with us.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
You were saying something a few minutes ago about living in a democratic society.
Right.
And have being provided enough information to make a positive decision.
Sure.
And you're absolutely right about that. And I totally agree with you. And we don't get enough information to make those decisions. And what I think a big reason for that, what a lot of people don't realize, is that with the Bush administration, the United States went from being a democracy to a republic. And basically the difference in that is, in a democracy, the people make the decisions. And in a republic, the elected officials make those decisions based on what they personally think is best for the people.
Well, you know, it's interesting that it's, actually, the right-wingers, always formulated the opposite. They say this is not a democracy, this is a republic, and they say that's the way it's supposed to be, elected representatives. But, you know, there's now direct election of senators. And we think, okay, it's time to vote for who do we want for U.S. senators. Well, that's not the way it was in the original Constitution, and there's a lot of these teabaggers that are saying we got to go back to that. So there's not direct election of the senators. They want to go as far away from democracy as possible. So, well, point well taken. Thank you very much. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Matt in Clinton Township. Hi, Matt. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
We're good.
Yeah, how you brought up earlier with World War II and Hitler and how you said, you know, not, you know, you should pay more attention to the History Channel than, you know, 101. And also, I believe, I'm sorry to say, I keep forgetting your name, Miss. It talks about, you know, in different books. I mean, there's different books you can read to educate yourself on certain things about sure. World War II and everything else and what Hitler did and how he accomplished and the fall of the Soviets and everything else. And I heard you talking about Reagan, you know, how he's one of the worst presidents. I mean, yeah, I could agree with you on some aspects of that.
Ever, we said.
Yeah, well, he's the worst president ever. Yeah. There's one thing I've noticed about Reagan. He did help. You know, with the extra spending and everything else, you know, he might have put us in, you know, I guess a fallback in the economy back then.
There was, you know, great amount of unemployment, higher. I think it was, it hit 10% under mm-hmm. Reagan in the early years.
People forget.
Yeah.
It was the early years. And what I've noticed about that, you know, Reagan ended up getting us out and helped fall of the communist state, and the communists have fallen.
Well, he took credit. He took credit for it.
Yeah, it's sort of if it rains during your administration.
Yeah.
I don't think it was any policy. That the Soviet Union was a house of cards, particularly economically. And if you think about it, Matt, that their military expenditures are really what bankrupted the Soviet Union, and it could happen to us as well. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's see here. A little off subject, but we can
that's
deal
it,
with it.
Here's, we don't care.
Here's Maurice in Detroit. Maurice, what's happening?
Hello, Peter, Julene. How y'all doing?
Hey,
good.
Maurice.
We're good.
Are you out driving around in this?
Hey, I've been doing this for a long time. I know what I'm doing. Hey, I want to talk about the Pistons.
The Pistons.
Especially one Rick Hamilton. You can pay to do a job, and it's not your job to bitch at the referee, at the ref. It's your coach's job.
Yeah.
You can't do your job, sit down. Let somebody else do it. Y'all ain't that great, so, you know, you don't make no noise. People don't even know that you're there. Fire station, boy, you puny. Hit the weight room, post up.
Boy, you're puny.
quit trying to bend on perimeter shooting. Y'all ain't that good.
He's more mad at the Pistons than he is at anyone else tonight.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
You got it out there. Now they know.
313.
And you're puny. Get in the weight room.
Here's Perry in Melvindale. Hey, Perry, you're on the air. What's up?
Hey, Peter. I've been listening for years.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm a fan. I respect your opinion, but I just want to know. Give me one thing positive about America. I've never heard you say it.
One thing.
We can come up with some stuff.
One positive thing.
We can do it. Come on, Peter.
I'm not. What do you mean, America? What's America?
Oh, come on. Don't give me that crap.
No. I'm going to give it to you.
Here's
come
one.
On.
I've got
don't
one.
Do the standard.
I've got one.
Answer.
I've got
come
one.
On.
I've got one. Ready?
Right. Yeah.
I, as a woman, won't be stoned to death for giving Peter the sexy eye.
Well, I
have a right to choose. We can go on and on. Peter, you need to come up with one.
Why do you guys always defend those countries?
What countries?
The third world, not even the third world, I guess you say. Why do you always defend the communist countries? Come on, Peter.
Like what countries?
We're not defending the communist
countries.
Come
on. What countries?
Oh, he's talking about Cuba.
Go ahead, Perry.
Cuba. Pete, give me one positive thing.
Come on, Pete. You can do it.
Well, I'm just wondering where he's going. Perry, you give me one.
Sure. We donate the most money to save AIDS out of anybody. There's one.
Okay, they're good. That's good. All right, that's good. Trying to think. I mean, you know, listen, I could go live anywhere in the world. I choose to live here. This is the country I was born in. I think being critical is extraordinarily important. There, you know, I have said any number of things. The foundation document of this country was so extraordinary, even with its limitations in it. Okay, he's thinking, wait a minute, he can't say one complete positive thing. But it launched in a formal manner the idea that individuals have rights that should not be usurped by government. And the fact that the United States government and all governments have always abrogated those freedoms whenever they felt that people were being critical of them. Because, you know, governments hate to be criticized. They put you in jail. The reason that they don't put me in jail or Jalene in jail or other critics of this country is because they don't think we're a threat in the slightest. They are so secure in the power that they have and the forces that they maintain to both culturally and militarily and every other way that that systems defend themselves that they can just let me and others just blather on forever. But however, when people take that real opposition and resistance into desiring to overcome the capacity of government to rule, well, then that's when they start getting nasty. And I got to take a break, but
you
thank
tried,
you very
Peter.
Much. Yep, yep. And, yeah, I mean, people, hey, call me one, you can call in, give me your one positive thing about the United States.
Yeah, this is your last chance to do it. Final segment, 313-298-WRIF.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101-WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Would you like to own a brand new computer and improve your credit at the same time? If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, Tronics Country says you're approved, even if you have bad credit or no credit. Call now for your new computer and get a free 20-inch LCD TV and color printer with your paid purchase. Call 1-800-990-2258. 1-800-990-2258. That's 1-800-990-2258.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Line scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove line scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day, and now you're two payments behind on your mortgage. Every time you turn on the radio, there's some cheerful couple telling you how they got out of debt overnight. Their stress is gone, and everything's just wonderful. Come on. The truth is, what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need real help, and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the attorney-driven program, dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing, and we don't make promises we can't keep. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Get out of debt. Call Credit Card Relief at 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
This is Night Call on 101-WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back.
Yes,
our final segment.
It is.
So, get to the phones. 313-298-WRIF. 1 o'clock, interview with Wendell Potter, who, as part of, we're talking about secrets a lot tonight, and it was Wendell Potter's duty to destroy Michael Moore and his film Sicko on behalf of the health industry.
Actually, he felt it was his duty at the time, and now he feels bad about it. He apologized.
This
will be a great interview. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, look out. Don't get startled.
Okay.
You cannot petition the line with prayer!
All right, last week we were talking about these 20 billboards that were supposed to appear around Detroit announcing that the rapture was almost upon us. It's going to be May 21st, 2011. It says he's coming again. Please, no obvious jokes.
Wait, what was that?
Has anybody seen those billboards?
Okay, I'm sorry. I was zoned elsewhere. I got you. I'm up to speed.
The First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution says Congress, and the first clause of it says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. Whenever we talk about this, I say, the Founding Fathers were so concerned about the pernicious effect of religion in the public sphere, that was the very first thing that they said. They didn't.
I mean, this is based on their own history.
Yeah. And it wasn't anything positive. You have the right of free speech. You have the right of free press or peacefully assemble. It said Congress will make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And that was another thing we've had to fight against all the time. And now the governor of Texas has found a solution to joblessness in Kentucky. They're going to build an ark.
Did happen to see that.
The state has promised generous tax incentives to a group of entrepreneurs who plan to construct a full-size replica of Noah's Ark, load it with animals and actors, and make it the centerpiece of a Bible-based tourist attraction called Ark Encounter.
Now, the key words here are the state has promised generous tax incentives.
And this is a private enterprise deal. I mean, it's a for-profit deal. And some constitutional experts have raised alarms over whether government backing for such an enterprise that promotes religion violates the First Amendment's requirement of separation of church and state. What don't they understand in that little phrase?
Right, exactly.
Right there?
You have a friend who really gets down on me for dog in the South, but, oh, Kentucky.
Well, I told you before, Kentucky, though, is, I guess you'd call it the North.
Yeah, kind of is. Doesn't take long to get there from here.
It did not secede from the Union.
Too.
Got to remember, the Confederate flag and those Confederates, the biggest traitors in American history. Is that any real patriot that would respect either the flag or the act of secession unless you are some anti-American subversive?
That's the easiest way to get knocked off of my Facebook page. The other day, someone had their profile picture was the Confederate flag, and I was like, bye-bye.
Now, get this. The theme park was conceived in Petersburg, Kentucky by the same Christian... Oh, no, I'm sorry. The theme park was conceived by the same Christian ministry that built the Creation Museum in Petersburg, Kentucky, where dioramas designed to debunk evolution show humans and dinosaurs coexisting peacefully on Earth, created by God in 6 days.
Mm.
The ministry, Answers in Genesis, believes that the Earth is only 6,000 years old. Now, you're welcome to your opinions and to create museums. They've drawn 1.2 million visitors in its first 3 years. Proving there's a sizable paying audience for entertainment rooted in a literal interpretation of the Bible.
Clearly.
I was going to say I would go to it, but are you ready for what this costs? Where is this? It's like,
to upper $30 range.
$30 to get in this. Ark Encounter is owned by a profit-making company. That's profit, P-R-O-F-I-T, not the other spelling. Developers of Ark Encounter have incorporated as a profit-making company, say they would expect to spend $150 million, employ 900 people, and attract 1.6 million visitors from around the world in the first year. With the Creation Museum only 45 miles away, they envision a Christian tourism corridor that would draw busloads from churches and Christian schools for 2 and 3 day visits. The park will include a 100-foot Tower of Babel, a first-century Middle Eastern village, and a journey through the Old Testament with special effects depicting Moses, the 10 plagues, and the parting of the Red Sea.
Sounds like a great time.
Yeah, if it wasn't $30, I'd go. There's a friend of mine, a Jewish friend of mine, that has, that he has, there's something like that in Arkansas.
Yeah.
And so.
Oh, Arkansas.
And he's got a little concession stand outside of one of these Christian museums.
Does he really?
Yeah.
And he does he make a little dough?
Yeah.
That's
just
funny.
Saying, why did I mention his religion? Just because, I mean, that sounds like some stereotype. But just,
well, it's just it's different.
He doesn't care. There's going to be a petting zoo, live bird and animal shows. Whoa, animal shows.
Oh, my.
What's that? And a play area with zip lines and climbing nets, all Bible-themed. Even the trainer, Dan Breeding, that's his last name, Breeding, will present animal acts with a gospel message about creation.
Oh, geez.
So anybody seen those billboards that say
in
the
Detroit.
Rapture in
mm-hmm.
Detroit, the rapture is upon us. All right.
I haven't seen any. Have you, Peter?
No, oh, I haven't.
Okay.
Here's Terrence in Ocala, Florida. Terrence, hi, you're on the air. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on, Terrence. Go ahead. Sorry, start again. I didn't have you on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, Excelsior, my friends.
Well,
you'd be glad to know that it's going to be 35 degrees down here in Ocala, Florida tonight, so don't feel...
Oh, my gosh.
You know, I saw that. It's really, really cold. It's 84 in Los Angeles today. But go ahead. What's up?
But I wanted to offer two definitions, if I could, and that governor with that Noah's Ark thing would support the first. A definition for government and a definition for American.
Okay.
Government is a group of men and women, otherwise known as government employees, offering their services under threats of violence at the barrel of a gun. That's what they do. They do not offer anything peaceful and harmony. It's all under threat and at the barrel of a gun.
Well, that's what all laws are. I mean, essentially, people have said that the political state at its core is a body of armed men. In other words, if you have laws, any law whatsoever, from speeding to I don't know what, if you and I, Terrence, don't do it, they send out the guys with the guns, right?
That is correct.
I mean, that's government. I mean, that's like an anarchist critique of the political state itself. The state is organized violence.
Yes, absolutely factual. That is the truth.
On the other hand, you hopefully can tame these beasts a little, but the track record is not real good. Most political states are pretty nasty. But go ahead. What else?
And for the American, for the most part, an American is a person that uses the title American to exercise their prejudice and discrimination upon anyone else that they determine is not American enough to please them.
Oh, boy, I wish you would have called earlier in the show.
Well, but do you think that defines yourself, though? I mean, you're not like that, are you?
No, but I wouldn't call me an American. I'd call me a human being. I was born a human being. An American is just a title, just like the Russians a title.
It's a location.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it is geography, and people, as far as I'm concerned, put too much stock in all that. I mean, it's one thing to be French. I mean, that's a nationality. If you think about it, the United States is not even the name of a country. It's like just a designation of an administrative district. It's states. It's united, right? I mean,
it's a peaceful term.
That's
not a peaceful term. Everyone says, I'm American, and I want to beat to death anyone else that isn't. And it's turned into an act of war, a charge of war or something like that.
Yeah, I know. But you know what I think? I think that that's like a third of our population. And it's unfortunate, actually, that that more people don't enunciate the other trend in American society, which is getting along with other people because this country is so diverse that we don't really have an ethnic nationality the way others do. And we're blessed in that manner that we have people from so many different countries and just don't get behind these wars that then become looked at like they're the Saturday football game that are so unfortunate. All right. Thank you, Terrence. Thanks for joining us from Florida.
California.
Florida.
Oh, did he say Florida?
Yeah.
Wow.
Ocala.
Ocala, yeah.
I think that's
I even lived there.
Did you?
Yeah, well,
you did?
In Florida.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Ocala, I think, is right near Disneyland World, whatever is there.
World.
World.
Yeah.
Right. Here's Tristan in Dearborn. Hi, Tristan. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul, Jillian. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Pretty good.
Call me Peter, though.
Oh, sorry.
That's the other.
Peter,
apostle.
Paul, and Jillian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're a band.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me and my homeowner were talking about it. That's why it's stuck on my mind.
That's okay.
That's all right.
Well, I got two things for you. Earlier, you guys were talking on the aspect of the presidents and everything.
Sure.
Personally, and I know some people are going to ridicule me on this, I think we could have done a lot worse than Obama.
Why do you think anybody would ridicule you? I mean, we could have done a lot worse. I think his name was John McCain and Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
That's a lot worse.
Yeah, definitely. The second thing, all right, on these religious billboards about the rapture and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Personally, I haven't seen one, but I've seen one on TV.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, I don't see anybody complaining about it. But God forbid that I myself, the practitioner, put something up on a billboard, then I'm going to have the entire Christian and Catholic community screaming about it.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, there's a group called Freedom From Religion Foundation. You can find them online at FFRF. And they have now billboards all over the country with atheist slogans and what they call free thought slogans. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I did not know that.
Yeah, but check it out. It's FFRF.org.
FFRF.org.
Yeah, like Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Yeah,
Ralph Frank.org.
All right.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Here is Pierre in Detroit. Pierre, you are with us. Bonjour or bonne nuit.
Hey, how's it going, Peter Paul?
Good.
By the way, I want to be a part of your band.
Okay.
Yeah, you can be in our band.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm calling on behalf because it's a new law, I believe, a new act that they had came about, what, like 5 years ago about the responsibility fees. I have a problem with that.
Wait. I don't even know what these are.
Is this credit cards, you mean?
No, responsibility fees. No, it's like if you get pulled over for a traffic violation,
uh-huh.
And if you get pulled over for, like, no proof of insurance or drinking and driving and stuff like that, you have to pay a minimum. You have to pay, like, up to $1,000 for up to 2 years.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't understand that because I hear that this act right here that just came about generates millions of dollars. And it's like, what are they doing? What is the state doing with this money? You know, then it's like, it's crazy because it's like, they said it's a responsibility fee, and I feel like it's a responsibility by going down there paying a ticket. You know, so it's like, I don't know. Maybe
well, drunk driving is a whole other thing, yeah. In my opinion.
But Pierre, what do you think about this, though? That if you're driving in New York City and you have an accident, the city is looking for ways to get its money back. So if you get hurt in a car accident, they're going to have this crash tax. A car fire accident with injury would cost you $490. A car fire without injury, $415. And any vehicle accident without injury will run you $365. You know, they've got mayor. They've got a billionaire mayor.
Yes.
Why doesn't he write a check?
If he loves his city so much.
Yeah. Yeah, responsibility. I don't know much about that.
Oh,
well, thank
yeah,
you, Pierre.
That's
thanks
interesting. We'll have to look
bring
more
that
into
out. That. I was actually probably buried in here somewhere. There, you know, all these billionaires that are agreeing to give away at least half their money. You know this thing?
Oh yeah, I do, and I have that somewhere here.
It's not responsible wealth.
It's let's see, Buffett.
Buffett.
And Mark Zuckerberg, co-founder of Facebook. He's already pledging to give away most of his wealth, this says. He and 16 other households have joined the Giving Pledge, a campaign by Bill Gates and Warren Buffett to commit wealthy individuals to giving away at least half of their holdings during their lifetimes or after their deaths. And Zuckerberg, this guy's 26 years old.
Yeah.
People wait until late in their career to give back, but why wait until there is so much to be done now?
Did you see the movie The Social Network about Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg?
I didn't.
For one thing, I'm a minority. Well, actually, my wife and I, we're a minority of two It's actually probably it's being nominated for Academy Awards and all that. It was written. The script was written by Aaron Sorkin, who did West Wing and other shows.
You know that he takes like 10 showers a day? I'm not kidding. That's his writing process.
Is it, what is it? Is that OCD?
Just a little.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so it was written by Sorkin.
So it was a well-done movie, good script, but it was boring. It was like a movie about business.
I don't have a ton of interest in seeing it. I mean,
but everybody said, what a jerk Zuckerberg was portrayed as.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of weird, but I doubt if he's much different than anybody else.
I don't think
so. It does business at that level. And... but where was I going with that? Maybe just there. But it occurs to me that if you're worth like him, like $6 point something billion or even more so, like these, how much is Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York City worth? Something like $30 billion?
Many billions, yeah.
And he's just going to give away half. What a cheapskate.
Yeah, for real. Zuckerberg has already pledged $100 million to improve Newark's public school system.
Oh, yeah, that's where I was with it. So what a jerk. He gives $100 million.
How dare he? To a school system.
To Newark schools. And he was, he had to be convinced by the Republican Governor Christie of New Jersey and somebody, and the mayor of Newark to make his donation public. He wanted, Zuckerberg wanted to do it
privately,
anonymously.
Yeah.
He also gave $50,000 publicly to the marijuana initiative in California.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Didn't know.
So, I don't know. So, I didn't think he was. I mean, he was certainly was portrayed as kind of a weird guy, but.
In the movie, but hey, you know what? Some of the weirdest cats are the smartest cats out there.
There's a group called Responsible Wealth, a nationwide network of 700 business leaders and high wealth individuals like Bill Gates' father.
Yes.
Who say they are opposed to the extension of the tax on the rich.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of these names on the list, I don't really know who they are, but they're good individuals. And, of course, there's criticism, coming from probably, just people who can't believe anyone would give their money away, saying it's a publicity stunt. Some have critics have pointed out that many of the signatories have already given away big portions of their wealth. Well, you know what? Just because you won't do it, it doesn't mean you can criticize these people.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to measure. What really is there? Why should there be this kind of impacted wealth? Oh, and by the way, in this hostage deal that Obama rolled over for the Republicans with, it also, pardon me, it was another giveaway to the rich in terms of the inheritance tax.
It's been
lowered.
Yep.
And no wonder the Republicans are so happy. Let's get Marty from Roseville on the air before we go. Marty, hi. It's Peter and Jeline. You're our last caller. Go ahead.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
We're good.
Good. Listen, I just wanted to touch on that last caller that called up about the responsibility laws.
Yeah, what's that all about?
He didn't entitle it right. It's called the driver's responsibility laws.
Oh,
okay, so now listen, I got busted one time, and I didn't have insurance on my vehicle because I couldn't afford it at the time.
Okay.
It happens.
Okay, so now, not only did I have to pay that ticket, but I also had to pay the Treasury Department $200, and that also goes 2 years in a row.
You have to pay it twice?
Okay. So now there's people that get caught driving on a suspended license. They pay $1,000 2 years in a row on top of what they already paid.
Wow.
Okay.
Whatever happened to double jeopardy?
Well, I think it's, and a lot of my peers think it's taxation without representation. It's ridiculous.
Well, you could debate it, but when the lawmakers in Lansing pass something, that's your representation. All right, Marty, thank you very much. Unfortunately, we got to go. Thank you. Thank you, Stephanie. And, Jaleen, next week will be our last show of the year.
Of the year. Oh, well, we'll make it a good one.
Yeah. So I hope you'll all join us. I'm actually going to get an email out to people.
Great.
I talked to somebody. Actually, I ran into an old friend today at breakfast. And I said, you get emails from me, don't you? I hadn't seen her in years and years. And she said, yeah, not very often. Am I missing a lot? I said, no.
That's how it goes.
But if you want to be on my email list, you can just write into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Please visit my website, Peter Werby. WERBE.com.
And join our Facebook page.
Join our Facebook page.
Night Call with Peter Werbe and Julian Jordan.
Did I just give my website?
PeterWerbe.com.
Yeah.
WERBE.
Yeah, you got it. All right. Thanks. Stay tuned for the interview, and you'll see, you'll hear about the attack on Michael Moore.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this. That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with the energy-saving Wave Ventilation Unit. Wave Ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. The computerized Wave Ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty, no filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars a year in energy costs. One customer wrote,
I was stunned by the difference. I had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. And now that smell is finally gone.
Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Find out more about Wave Ventilation right now.
For free information, go to goodairnow.com. That's goodairnow.com. Or call 1-866-324-9481. That's 1-866-324-9481.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
Is it time for a new roof? If the roof on your house is old, weathered, or in need of help, you can save $500 if you call Sears Roofing right now. Call Sears for a free in-home consultation at 1-877-938-1414. Call right now and you can save $500. Sears licensed, fully insured contractors get your roofing job done right. Just call 1-877-938-1414. Sears has a variety of shingles and styles that are built for long-lasting performance. And you'll save $500 if you call right now. So call 1-877-938-1414. Hurry. Offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. So call Sears Roofing and save $500. Call 1-877-938-1414. That's 1-877-938-1414. Sears.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
My mom is my hero. She goes into burning buildings. She finds people inside who need to be saved. She helps them get out, even when she can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My mom is a firefighter, but the best thing she can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
Want to knock out that Christmas gift for the rock fan on your list and help out Detroit families in need? 101 WRIF and Volunteers of America want you to man up and give this holiday season. Join the Riffzone Meltdown live on location today.
from 3 to 7 p.m. at the Hayloft in downtown Mount Clemens. Get your Holiday Edition WRIF Man Card with your donation, along with Michigan State Oakland U basketball tickets and Globetrotters tickets while supplies last. Get in on sweet auction items like a Slash autographed guitar, a Chevelle framed CD display and signed drumstick, and more. Get more details at WRIF.com. Man up and give with Volunteers of America and 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks. 101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. A lot in the news lately about whistleblowing, the big whistleblowing episode of all times, the biggest of all times, probably WikiLeaks. The people in power, the elites, they don't like their inner mechanisms of their decision making made public. They like to do it in stealth. You know, you've heard the expression, right in front of your face, but always behind your back. So there's always a few, it's the one-eyed Jack. There's always an eye that's not being shown. And when we finally get somebody that's going to say, hey, look, here's the way it's really functioning. You thought it was happening like this. Well, there's a whole lot more going on. And I think we owe a lot. We can debate forever about WikiLeaks, but I think some of the more basic elements of day-to-day issues and policy decisions that take place in this country that have been made transparent are incredibly important. Someone who's done that for us is Wendell Potter. He has a new book out called Deadly Spin, an Insurance Company Insider Speaks Out on How Corporate PR is Killing Healthcare and Deceiving Americans. Wendell Potter is a senior fellow on healthcare at the Center for Media and Democracy, and a leading critic of the health insurance industry. You may have seen him on other media outlets. He was leading the campaign to discredit Michael Moore's film Sicko, and this figures a lot in his brand new book, Deadly Spin, published by Bloomsbury Press. It's a pleasure to bring him to our microphones now. He's been on a speaking tour. Wendell Potter, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be on, Peter. Thank you.
And we have you in Portland, Oregon right now. You've found incredible interest in your book, haven't you?
Well, I have. It's been very rewarding. In fact, the book was released last month, and it's already in the third printing. So the demand has been significant, and I am on this book tour, and it's the beginning of it, and been very gratified at the way it's been received and reviewed.
You've told your story so many times, but I think we need to tell it again. You are earning six figures as a PR flack for the healthcare industry. You're working for Cigna, one of the giants, and suddenly what happened? A bout of conscience or what? But tell us the story.
Well, it was. I had become increasingly uncomfortable being a spokesman for the health insurance industry during the last year or so that I was there. I was concerned about the kinds of health benefit plans that the insurance industry is trying to push more and more of us into. These plans feature very high deductibles so that we're paying a lot more for health care out of our own pockets, even as we're making even higher payments in premiums for the health insurance coverage. So we're getting less value and paying more for it. I didn't like that, and I knew that as more people are in these plans, they're often not able to get the care they need. They don't go to the doctor as often as they should in many cases. They don't pick up their medication. So more and more people are winding up in the ranks of the underinsured. I also was learning that the practices of the insurance industry was contributing to the rapidly growing number of people without insurance. Now more than 51 million Americans don't have insurance. But it really took a trip back home. I grew up in Tennessee to just have it in my face, the actual consequences of what my industry has done to our healthcare system. I picked up the local newspaper in Kingsport, Tennessee, which is in northeastern Tennessee where I grew up, and I read about a healthcare expedition across the state line in Virginia, and I borrowed my dad's car. I was very curious. I wanted to drive up there to see it because I said that people were driving from 400 and 500 miles away. Once a year, it's held at the county fairgrounds in Wise County, Virginia. Doctors from throughout the state volunteer their time to treat people. And I was just curious about what it would look like. And I have never had such an awakening in my life as I did when I walked through the fairground gates.
What did you see?
I saw hundreds and hundreds of people who were standing in very long lines waiting to get care They were in the rain. They were soaking wet in many cases, and these lines stretched out of view. And in many cases, the care was being provided in barns and animal stalls and under open-air, open-sided tents. And you could just walk around and see people being treated for one thing or another. And we're not talking about just blood pressure checks here. People were having mammograms. They were having skin cancers removed. They were having teeth pulled. They were having sigmoidoscopies and colonoscopies done. It was just incredible what I saw. It was like a big MASH unit in a war-torn country. In fact, it looked like what I would imagine that to be, either a battlefield where people were injured or in a third world country where people didn't have access to care and they were having to resort to getting care in a barn. It was clear to me when I saw that scene that the industry that I work for had made it necessary through their practices for people to stand in these long lines in the rain to get care in animal stalls. So I knew then that before too long, I would be leaving my job. I just didn't know exactly how I would do it, what I would do it, and what I would do next.
Well, you got a new assignment, didn't you, Wendell Potter? But here comes all of a sudden Michael Moore, the scourge of the big shots from our own state of Michigan here, who puts out a movie called Sicko, and it indicts the medical system and the health insurance system. Tell me about your role in all that.
Well, the insurance industry was really afraid of Michael Moore and the movie Sicko. We didn't know a lot that was in it. He kept it close to his vest, exactly what was in the movie. The insurance industry actually sent a young man as a spy over to the Cannes Film Festival in the south of France to be there when it was first screened so that we would know what was in the movie. So based on that information, we began to develop a very expensive and sophisticated PR campaign to discredit Michael Moore and his film, Sicko. If you may remember, if you saw the movie, it was about the health insurance industry and its practices and the fact that even people in this country who do have insurance, often they can't get the care they need because there is some corporate bureaucrat somewhere who says they can't get what they need and what their doctors say they need. And then it also, he went around the world to portray how other healthcare systems have been able to achieve universal coverage for their citizens. Well, the insurance industry was very afraid of that. They were afraid that it might persuade Americans in larger numbers to think that we needed to have a radical overhaul of our healthcare system. And the insurance industry didn't want that because it profits unbelievably by the status quo. And so I was part of the effort to help mislead people about the movie and to help attack Michael Moore as an individual and a filmmaker.
My guest is Wendell Potter. He's written Deadly Spin. An insurance company insider speaks out on how corporate PR is killing healthcare and deceiving Americans. And I want to get in more to exactly how Wendell Potter and the insurance industry dealt with Michael Moore's film Sicko. You can go to michaelmoore.com, and he's got lots of information about his film. You can also go to WendellPotter.com. It's Wendell with two L's. And there'll be a link on my website as well, PeterWerby.com. So the film comes out. What does Wendell Potter do? I mean, in fact, describe the effort. Was it like just you, or did you have 20 people? Or, I mean, how massive was the campaign against Sicko by Michael Moore?
Well, it was massive, and it wasn't just me, and it wasn't just Sicko, but it was industry-wide. I mentioned that the industry sent someone to France to see the first screening of it anywhere, but I was given an assignment to fly to Michigan, to Bel Air, where the official U.S. screening was held on June the 16th, 2007. And I went there without disclosing who I was and wanted to see the movie for myself to see exactly how my company was portrayed, Cigna.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into the movie with a notepad and took notes, and as soon as it was over, called my office back and gave them some more information about what was in the movie so that we could be more prepared to answer calls from reporters and others when the movie came out. We knew that people would be upset with Cigna and the health insurance industry, so it was important for us to see the movie so that we would know how to develop a campaign to defend the industry's practices and to discredit the movie. So the central thing that we did
Let me interrupt just a second, Wendell Potter. You were not there by yourself, though, were you?
No, I wasn't. I brought my son along with me.
Yeah.
It was a father and son expedition. We flew from Philadelphia, where we live, to Detroit, rented a car in Detroit, drove all the way up to Bel Air, where Michael Moore has a home or had a home, and his the screening was a benefit for the County Democratic Party, and I had gotten tickets through the Democratic Party, and my son and I went up there. I paid for his expenses. The company paid for mine. He is a film buff and a Michael Moore fan, so I thought he would enjoy seeing the movie and being a part of a premiere. So he went with me, and it was a truly profound experience. I was affected by the movie. I knew when I saw it that Michael Moore got it right. He was very careful in fact checking his facts, making sure that his portrayal was accurate. Now, of course, he has a point of view. He, like I do, believes that we really need to have some meaningful change in our healthcare system here. He has some ideas about how it should change and be more like other companies, other countries. So I knew from my own study of those countries' healthcare systems that he got that right too. So I was conflicted, and I knew that my son would see this from different eyes as well.
Well, did he tell me about the relationship here? Did your son know what your intent was? And also, he's an adult, is he? He looked grown up when I saw the photograph.
Yeah, that was in 2007. He was, 3 years ago, he would have been 24.
Okay.
And, he's an adult. He was in college at the time, and so he knew what I did to a certain extent. It's hard to describe. If you're a PR guy, it's sometimes hard to describe exactly what you do. And frankly, there's some things you don't want to tell people that you do. As I have written in the book, I had never disclosed any of that, obviously, when I worked in the health insurance industry. So he didn't know a lot of the dark arts of PR, as I call them, that the insurance industry uses to manipulate public opinion to influence public policy. So he knew I worked for Cigna. He knew I was in PR, and he knew that I was there to find out more about the movie and how Cigna was portrayed. But, you know, he didn't know a lot, and I don't think I explained a whole lot about the campaign that was about to start to discredit the movie.
And your son was enthusiastic about the film and asked to have a photograph taken with the three of you, that you, your son, and Michael Moore.
It is true, and there is a picture, I think it may be on my website, that another movie goer who was there snapped a photo, a picture of us with me on one side of Michael Moore and my son on the other, and my son also asked him to autograph a poster, which he has and still has on his bedroom wall. I didn't tell Michael Moore or anyone, for that matter, that I worked for Cigna. Most of the folks who were there were local, so I'm sure that they knew I was from somewhere else, but no one really quizzed me. But I was a spy, and
yeah,
my son was there on a spy mission with me.
Deadly Spin is the book. Wendell Potter is the author. You're listening to the Peter Werbe Show, and Wendell Potter left a 30-year career in public relations, including with Cigna, the health insurance giant, and has been speaking out against the abuses of the healthcare system. Now, you started to say, I cut you off at some point, you were talking about the central focus of SICKO and the impact it had on you, and you undoubtedly understood what effect that would have on your employers and the health industry.
Yeah, one of the things that I did in my job over the years was handle what we called high-profile cases, and often they were called horror stories. We would often be getting calls from reporters or TV producers or radio producers about someone in the local community who had problems with their health insurance company refusing to pay for some needed treatment. And I did that over many years to the point I was almost numb to it. And so I recognized a lot of the stories, the anecdotes, the vignettes in the movie. I knew they were real because I had handled them, those kinds of things myself over the years. People who were desperate for care but had been denied coverage for care by a corporate bureaucrat who might be a doctor but is just as much of a corporate bureaucrat as I was. So I knew that those stories were real, and the people who were telling those stories were telling true stories about their care. And there were a couple of people who were insured by Cigna. When I got back to my office in Philadelphia, or even before I got back, I called in, and there were people who were researching those cases to find out exactly what the company did or did not do, and so that we'd be try to be prepared to handle calls from reporters when they came in.
How'd you do? How did Cigna do in its counter to counter the effect of Michael Moore's Sicko movie?
Well, you know, I think we weathered the storm pretty good. I think that you know, there were some stories that were negative stories about Cigna and how it had handled certain patients and their care that had been denied for them, or the coverage that had been denied for their care. I remember talking to a reporter with People magazine that had done a feature on one of the people who was insured by Cigna. One of the things that we did, and PR people still do in the insurance industry, is you refuse to talk about individual cases, and you say you cannot do that because of federal laws on privacy, and that's true. But PR people use that as an excuse not to really answer many questions from reporters. So we use that as an excuse for not talking about those particular cases, and then we would talk in generalities about how good the company was and how much the company paid every year in claims and how many people were satisfied with their insurance. And you know, that's true to a certain extent. There's no doubt that insurance companies do good for a lot of people if they are lucky enough to get coverage in the first place.
Sure. Well, was there ever any skullduggery, I mean, any attempt to interfere with distribution of Michael Moore's film Sicko, or anything really underhanded or dirty tricks?
Well, the dirty tricks, I think, were done to try to make people think that the movie was not worth seeing, that it was not factual. And the industry used the PR firm to plant that thought into people's minds, and to get pundits, TV pundits, and to get editorial writers and conservative think tanks to write about the movie and spread misinformation and often outright lies about the healthcare systems abroad. And they also wanted to try to persuade people that Michael Moore was a left-wing nut, and that his ideas were un-American. So that was part of the strategy to depict him as someone who was dangerous to American government and society.
The book is Deadly Spin, and insurance company insider speaks out on how corporate PR is killing healthcare and deceiving Americans. It's published by Bloomsbury Press. Wendell Potter is the author, my guest here on the Peter Werby Show. We just have a few minutes left with him. You can go to WendellPotter.com or my website as well. Well, to some extent it failed. We have something that at least is called healthcare reform. You're now a senior fellow on healthcare at the Center for Media and Democracy. And so you're also the person to ask, how do you evaluate this at least first step? There was certainly a lot of criticisms of it, both from people that are totally dissatisfied it didn't go far enough, and those on the right who say it's this horrible step towards socialism and bureaucracy and death panels. Maybe we ought to leave that. Let's just say that that's not, the latter is not true. How do you respond to the critics, the liberal and left critics that say this is not the Obama administration's healthcare plan? Just doesn't do it, even as a first step.
Yeah, well, you know, almost everything that is done legislatively in Washington that is enacted into law is compromised to one extent or another. No political party usually gets entirely what it wants. So this certainly was a compromise. I think more of a compromise than Democrats ever thought it would be. They thought, I think, going into this, that it could be a much more far-sweeping piece of legislation than it ultimately turned out to be. And they were hoodwinked, quite frankly, by the special interest in the insurance industry in particular. President Obama campaigned on health care reform, and he said that we needed to have a public option. We needed to have another competitor for private insurance companies that people could choose from if they didn't want to buy from a private insurance company. And he also said he didn't think that Americans should be forced to buy a health insurance product or benefit plan if they couldn't afford it. So he was opposed to the so-called individual mandate that is part of the bill. So the insurance industry wanted two things. They were able to strip out the public option that he and other Democrats said was very important, and they were able to get included in the bill this individual mandate, because the insurance industry loves that. That's the main part of the bill that they wanted to have in there, and it's in there. So it contains a lot that the insurance industry wanted. It also contains things that are good for consumers. It will abolish and make illegal some of their most egregious practices, like canceling people's policies when they get sick just because they want to and because they can. And it prevents them from purging accounts of small businesses when they come up for renewal because someone has gotten sick who is an employee. And it will require them to eliminate the use of pre-existing conditions to deny people coverage. So there's some very, very important consumer protections in the bill. So it's good as far as that goes. It does keep our health care system in place that we've had for all these years. So to call it reform is not really accurate, I don't think. But it's a start, to use a term you use and I've used before. We needed to start to do something.
Mm-hmm.
We've been trying to do this for 100 years, and every single time the special interests have been able to beat it back.
Aren't the congressional Republicans going to do everything in their power to repeal it? That a lot of them got elected on that basis. They're going to repeal Obamacare.
They did, and it was demagoguery. They I guess some of them really think that that's a desirable outcome and something that should be done. I don't say that that's not genuine on some of their parts, but it's not going to happen, because what they will find out when they take office, the insurance company lobbyists will come and have a real talk to them, kind of a come to Jesus kind of meeting, and say, look, we gave you a lot of money to help you get elected. Now here's the way things are going to be. We don't want this bill repealed. You can go ahead and have your hearings in the House. You can castigate it. You can make sure that people don't like it to the point that it can be weakened, and you can strip out some of the consumer protections. But do not repeal this, because it makes people buy our product.
Yeah, a lot more, tens of millions more.
Tens of millions more. Yeah. At least 30 million Americans presumably will be brought into coverage with this bill. If you can't afford to pay the premiums to your private insurance company, the government will subsidize those premiums or give you a tax credit so that you can buy your insurance. So the insurance industry benefits enormously. They will have new customers that they otherwise would not get, because people just simply can't afford to buy insurance on their own these days. And they'll be getting revenues that they would not have gotten, and they'll translate that into billions of dollars in profits over the years.
Wendell Potter, let's do this real quickly and bring your visit to Bel Air, Michigan, and the opening of Michael Moore's movie Sicko, and bring it up to date to 2010. I saw the most extraordinary television when you and Michael Moore on a split screen were on Keith Olbermann's show, and you actually apologized to him. Was that that for what you had done as a lobbyist or as a PR guy for Cigna? Was that arranged ahead of time? I mean, was...
It came about almost serendipitously. I'm not pronouncing that word correctly.
That's good enough.
I was asked to be on the show because my book had just come out, and Michael Moore was talking about it because I've got a chapter in there called The Campaign Against Sicko. And the producers for the show asked me if I would be okay to be on the show with Michael Moore. I was fine with that, because I did want to. I did want to apologize for my role. I know that he produced a good quality film that was factually correct. And what I have been doing since I've been speaking out and in this book is somewhat making amends, is telling the truth and the unvarnished truth. I'm not engaged in opinion. I'm not doing anything except telling it like it is and pulling the curtains back. And part of that is essentially making amends, and my apology to Michael Moore was part of that.
Yeah, and Keith Olbermann was uncharacteristically very quiet and just left
wasn't he?
The two of you talking.
That was remarkable TV, and I'm almost amazed that I was a part of it, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity. But he just kind of sat back and let us talk. It was amazing.
We just have less than 60 seconds. What should be done to give us a modern medical system that's worthy of leading in, well, I was going to say leading industrial country, at least our country. What do we need real quickly? What should it be?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. What I want us to do is to try to get some of our best minds in a room, and people go into this room, drop their baggage, drop if they represent a big insurance company that's for profit, just forget for the time that they're in that room that they have to satisfy Wall Street's expectations. Look at our country is different from any other country, and try to design a healthcare system that works for all of us. It may not look just like Canada's or the one in France or the UK, but we can do a heck of a lot better if we just put our best American minds in one room and let's say we want to do the best for our citizens.
Well, thank you so much. Wendell Potter has been my guest. He has an extraordinary new book. Everyone should read it to get an idea of the forces that are behind the scenes trying to stop what is best for the American people. The book is called Deadly Spin. An insurance company insider speaks out on how corporate PR is killing healthcare and deceiving Americans. You can go to Wendell Potter's website. Just put .com after his name, WendellPotter.com. There'll be a link at my site, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. And it's published by Bloomsbury Press. Wendell Potter, thank you so much, not just for being on the show, but for writing your book and everything you've done working with the Center for Media and Democracy.
Thank you for having me on the show. I enjoyed this.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Hi, folks. Peter Epstein, president of Merit Financial, the Gold People. With the changing economy, you probably know how important it is to protect your wealth. But did you know that gold can give you an edge when other investments are down? At Merit Financial, we make it easy to get the right gold at the right price right away. Surveys show we beat other major companies' prices by up to 20%. That's 20% more gold for your money. The Merit Guarantee is simple. We'll beat any advertised price on the products we offer. And we guarantee every piece of gold is individually inspected to assure the highest quality. Call Merit right now and I'll send you our gold investment guide absolutely free. Find out why so many people choose Merit for gold. Call right now for your free gold guide.
Call 1-866-906-6634. Call right now for your free gold investment guide. Call 1-866-906-6634. That's 1-866-906-6634.
It's amazing how great your home looks with new Carpenter flooring, especially when you get an amazing value from a company you trust. That's why you should call Sears Flooring. With Sears Flooring, you'll save 20% right now. Just call 1-888-491-3939, and Sears Flooring will bring the showroom to you. Sears has a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, or laminate to match your style and budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring for a free in-home consultation. You'll save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
Would you like to own a brand new computer and improve your credit at the same time? If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, Tronics Country says you're approved, even if you have bad credit or no credit. Call now for your new computer and get a free 20-inch LCD TV and Keller printer with your paid purchase. Call 1-800-990-2258. 1-800-990-2258. That's 1-800-990-2258.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101, The Real Riff.
I guess we got caught up in the crazy housing boom.
We had been in the house so long, we didn't want to lose it.
What these people share is that they all got in trouble with their mortgages, and they all called a certified housing counselor for help.
Our housing counselor looked at our paperwork and she knew something was wrong.
She understood what needed to be done, and she helped me work it out with the bank. This is a free service. Call the National Foundation for Credit Counseling now. Call 1-866-687-6322 or visit mortgagehelpnow.org.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werbe.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werbe here with you. You know, when I was in college, it was all part of the American dream. That is, those of us that were very frequently from the middle class, but some people from, you know, the working class as well, saw college as the road to success, that not just a high school diploma, and in Detroit, usually would take you off to one of the factories, which paid good wages at that time. But those of us who had greater aspirations, we would go to college. This is the American dream. I'm just talking about myself. And college would prepare you for a middle-class life. That is, that you could live in the suburbs, you could have two cars, your wife wouldn't work. You know, you can tell where this is all coming from. Things have changed considerably. Here in Michigan, when there's many colleges, quite a few very good private ones, but when we think of universities in the state of Michigan, here in our area, it's Wayne State University, then University of Michigan, Michigan State University, of course, where I went, Ferris State, places like that. Well, they're all under the gun. And if any of you have are in college, or if you have children that are in college, you know what that gun is all about. It's a lot about finances, but also the quality of education. And also, is that a ticket to success as we thought a generation ago? Joining me is Nancy Fulbright. She has written Saving State U, Why We Must Fix Public Higher Education. And Nancy Fulbright is a professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. And she's the author of three other books from New Press, and it's published by New Press. Pardon me, The Invisible Heart, The War on the Poor, and The Field Guide to the U.S. Economy. We join her in her office in Amherst, Massachusetts. Nancy Fulbright, welcome to the Peter Werbe Show.
Thanks, Peter.
I'm going to get you to do most of the talking because you can hear from my voice. My cold has not gone away. But the problem is fairly vast. So can you give us sort of a thumbnail sketch of what Saving State U, Why We Must Fix Public Higher Education is all about?
Well, it's basically about what a great contribution public higher education has made to economic development and also to equality of opportunity in the United States. And with economic changes over the last 20 years, we've seen tuition and fees going up a lot faster than financial aid, really hurting middle-class students in particular. And I think that's a really serious problem, and we need to fix it.
Yeah, and, well, that is a thumbnail. But I sometimes when I see these fees, given what I'm sure you and I paid when we were in college,
yep.
I say, how can a family have two people in college? The two people in college, if you have a residential college, it's what you normally think like a middle-class person would earn in a year.
Yeah, it's really startling. If you look at the average cost of attending a public university net of financial aid, and you look at the average income of a family right in the middle 20%, the middle quintile of the income distribution, sending that one kid to college, again, net of financial aid, comes to about 25% of the middle-class family's income. It's just too high. And imagine trying to send two or three kids to college in a row,
sure,
or even at the same time.
Well, when I introduced you, I was saying that that a generation ago, or when we were in college, that we saw going to college as a ticket to the entree into the American dream, or if you were from a middle-class family, the maintenance, the continuance of the American dream. Is it still such?
Well, you know, I have mixed feelings about the ticket metaphor. I think it's true. I mean, I always tell my students that it's really, really important for them to stay in school and get their degree because it's going to put them in a better position in the labor market, especially in a recession like the one we're going through today, where unemployment is really high. To have a college degree, really, it's a really great advantage. But I think there has been too much emphasis on the individual returns to college, that if you go to college, you'll earn a lot more, and so it's an economically rational decision. It's kind of got people thinking that people should just buy their own ticket and then they can redeem that ticket later on. And I think that really distracts from the importance of public higher education and why we need to give students more public support that we all benefit, that when we pay taxes to help kids make it through college and get a good college education, that they pay us back down the road with higher incomes and higher taxes in turn. So, yeah, you know, I think it's a ticket, but it's a ticket for all of us, not just for the individuals that are claiming it.
Sure. Now, there seems to be a rise in community colleges, ones that that academically aren't always, not entirely, but aren't always thought of as highly as sort of the highly funded, state institutions like in Michigan, Wayne State, Michigan State, University of Michigan. And does that have, is there a quality question here? And are we sending the upper middle class and the wealthy to the big ticket? Here we go, that word again. But, the high priced college, the prestigious college. And then, so there's sort of a class differentiation going on here.
Yeah, there is increased segregation by income class in higher education, and the big state universities now are very much kind of reserved for students whose parents can help them pay the tuition and fees. Unless they can get some really good merit aid or they're eligible for some federal financial aid in the form of Pell Grants. But there has been evidence for some time of increased kind of economic segregation at schools. You know, but that said, I want to emphasize that community colleges and state colleges can be much better integrated into state university systems and can play a very, very positive role. I'm just terrified that the effect of budget cuts is going to be to make the problem worse rather than better in terms of improving their graduation rates and improving the quality that they provide relative to the flagship universities.
Well, sure. And we're in a period that everyone knows that tax revenues are going down. There's state cuts everywhere. And so when you talk to university administrators or boards of regents like out in California, they say, we have no choice. We have to raise your fees one third. I mean, that's almost unimaginable. And that's why there was that great revolt among the college students in California.
Yeah, you know, California saw 30% increases in tuition and fees in a system that was once the American ideal. I mean, virtually free, virtually universal, very well integrated system of public higher education. And there's also big increases in universities elsewhere. UMass Amherst has seen some really hefty tuition and fee increases. It's happening everywhere.
Sure, here too.
State funding. As state funding is cut, the burden of paying is being shifted onto students and their families. That's exactly what's happening.
The book is Saving State U, Why We Must Fix Public Higher Education. My guest on the Peter Werby Show is Nancy Fulbert. Pardon me. You teach at the University of Massachusetts and at Amherst, and it's a land-grant college in the way that the Michigan State was. I guess it was Michigan Agricultural College when it began. But weren't those initially supposed to be free of tuition, free from tuition costs?
Well, they were certainly meant to be widely available to the population, and they were really seen as kind of an economic development strategy. And they fulfilled that role, I think, in a very successful way. They were expanded tremendously in terms of enrollments after World War II, partly because the GI Bill gave students not just support in the form of tuition and fees, but also stipends, you know, to attend college. So the land-grant system got expanded hugely in the 60s and 70s. And then in the 80s and 90s, it began to kind of run out of gas. And now it's really sputtering.
Mm-hmm. I thought in the 19th century they were actually free.
Well, you know, in the 19th century, some of them were free, but they weren't educating a very large share of the population. It's easier to provide a free college education system when only a very small percentage of the population is attending. And what's happened now is enrollments have expanded enormously. And, you know, about 80% of college students in the U.S. today are going to public institutions.
Hmm.
So, you know, that's a lot of students.
There's not a great completion rate. Like, I never got a degree, actually, but nothing to do with tuition costs. Just
Yeah, it's really, I think that's a very good observation, that a large percentage of high school graduates enter college, but graduation rates overall are not much better than about 60%.
And why is that? Why do they think that?
Well, I think there are a couple of reasons. I think that economic pressures are one of them, that students have a very hard time paying their bills and also paying their living expenses and also studying and getting through. I think also we, in our effort to keep costs down at major public universities. We've created a kind of mass production model that involves a lot of really large classes, a lot of tough competition to get into classes that are not so widely available. And we haven't paid enough attention to advising and to retention and to kind of helping students form the social networks that they need to tough it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nancy Fulbright, maybe you could take us back into the 19th century, because there wasn't always a free public universal education of K through high school. That was in the 1830s or so.
Yeah, and I think what is really interesting about the history of education is that it's very connected to economic development and to the interests of employers. And employers, in Massachusetts in particular, in the early 19th century, employers really, really supported the expansion of public education. They threw their weight behind it. They said, look, we're happy to pay taxes to help improve the quality of our labor force.
They wanted an educated workforce.
Yeah, they wanted an educated workforce. And to some extent, their support also helped facilitate the emergence of land-grant public university systems. And I think one of the reasons that we're running into problems now over the last 20 years is that we're living in a different, much more global economy where businesses are less tied to the United States or to the state, you know, in which they are primarily located than they were before. And so they can obtain highly educated workers very easily without paying the costs of producing them. And that creates a kind of a problem, an incentive problem.
Which isn't there.
The
incentive is not there for them.
Right, yeah. Right. So I guess I'm trying to frame this carefully, because I don't want to argue that businesses are engaged in some kind of conspiracy to undermine public higher education. That's not true at all. But they don't have a vested interest in it to the extent that they have in the past. And another problem is that a lot of businesses bargain very aggressively with state governments for tax breaks, and they're able to do that because they are so mobile. If they don't like the tax deal they're getting, they'll shut down and they'll go elsewhere. Certainly, Michigan knows a lot about that kind of process.
Yeah. Businesses moving out, right?
Yeah, and that's really reduced corporate income contributions and in every state, and that's contributing to the crunch in funding public higher education. So there's really a big structural problem in the relationship between our taxpayers, our universities, and our businesses.
Well, I'm keep coming back to this theme about free higher education, because we take it for granted, as I said. I mean, if all of a sudden they said families are going to have to start paying ninth grade through high school seniors, we'd all go, what? I mean, that's impossible. That we never pay for that. But I was thinking about, there are some systems that have been free, like famously, like isn't the City College of New York, not anymore, but they used to be.
Yes, that's right. It was a virtually free system. And I don't think it would actually take a whole lot to move towards a free system in the United States, depending on how, you know, to what extent we also wanted to expand the number of students that were enrolled. But there are, you know, many examples from other countries of lowering tuition and fees and being able to do that in a sustainable way.
Like, for instance, tell me.
Well, France and Denmark both have public higher education systems that are virtually free. In Britain and Australia, student loan programs are set up in a way that makes it easier for students to borrow money and to pay back at a rate that's determined by the income that they're earning. So there's a ceiling that's placed on their payback rates that makes it a lot more affordable. The state of Georgia has basically a free public higher education system.
Really?
funded by a dedicated state lottery, and any student in a Georgia high school who graduates with a grade of B or better can go to a state institution free of charge.
I don't understand. In Michigan, we have a lottery that's supposed to go to schools, you know, local schools, and the schools are, a lot of places are terrible, like Detroit, pardon me, and costs at our state institutions, the universities, just keep going up. I'm wondering, where is the money going? I don't think it's being stolen or anything like that.
Well, it is really complicated. It varies a lot from state to state. And one of the things I try to do in my book is argue that people really need to form coalitions, students, faculty, staff, parents, alumni, taxpayers, they really need to pool their resources, get together, and figure out what's going on with their state budgets, what's going on the revenue side in terms of how money is spent, and what's going on the tax side in terms of how money is being raised. And, you know, it's complicated, but it's really, really important. You know, people really need to mobilize around more informed participation in the budgeting process.
Well, I want to actually thank you for bringing that up, because we could spend the entire 25 minutes simply talking about the problem.
No kidding.
But Nancy Fulbury is my guest, and she's written Saving State U, Why We Must Fix Public Higher Education, in probably about 2 minutes. I would have said in 2 minutes, Nancy, please tell me how we can fix all this. Well, it's one of the things that, of course, it's happened in the body politic is we're all atomized. We're not involved in big social reform movements. In fact, the ones that are pretty much on the defensive, like labor unions. But what, so there's parents listening, or there's students listening to us now, and they're going, whoa, get together with all kind of the stakeholders. How in the world do I do that? I mean, how do people move literally from a dead standstill, passive observers of their life and the problems they face, to activity? And I don't know if that's fair to ask you. We should probably say to them, how are you going to do it? But if they asked you, what would you say?
Well, let me tell you what we've been doing here in Massachusetts. We formed a group called the Public Higher Education Network of Massachusetts, PHENOM for short. And we've brought together, largely at the impetus of student activists who are really concerned about tuition and fees, but we've brought together faculty, staff, alumni. We've done a lot of lobbying together at the state legislature. I had never been to my state capitol before I got involved with the group. I had never walked into a legislator's office and said, I want to tell you what's happening at my university. I was fascinated by the really crucial role that union members who are among the staff at our universities, how good they were at lobbying. They've had some experience of, you know, working together to try to make their voices heard. They kind of helped us show how it was done. And then we succeeded in persuading some legislators who we saw as allies to form a higher education caucus in the state legislature. And they're kind of empowering one another and developing a much stronger political agenda for public higher ed. Now, I don't know yet that that's going to pay off in the very near future, but I do feel pretty confident that it's going to yield some pretty important benefits over the next couple of years.
And one thing we can say for sure, sitting at home cursing one's fate is not going to get anywhere.
Exactly.
So I always say, unless we just want to thatch our roofs and admit that we're all peasants, that it's incumbent upon us to start seizing control of our lives, or at least giving a good fight for it. And I think part of the problem is that people don't know where the locus of the fight is. I mean, how do I move out of my living room today, or I'm driving the car and listening to this interview, and yes, I agree, and where am I going to go tomorrow? Well, it sometimes is pretty difficult, but ordinary people throughout American history have altered American history, and in other places in the world history. And sometimes when you think about it, it seems impossible, but there's two choices, and that is sitting passively and accepting what happens to you, and the other is fighting back. And sometimes it takes some real thought and some real effort to figure out how to fight back.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, the one thing that really made a big, very deep impression on me going into the state house in Boston was seeing where my state legislators eat lunch. Well, it just changed my perception of them. It just made me realize that they are kind of ordinary people really struggling to do a really tough job. They're not paid very well for the job that they do. They take a lot of abuse, and they're often kind of surrounded by really well-paid lobbyists with a lot of resources, and yet they're also looking for the opportunity to talk to their constituents. And I don't know, just seeing where they ate, and talking to them where they were made me, I don't know, just made me more, made me feel more positive about the whole process of trying to change state policy.
Mm-hmm. How about student loans? I know that when I've had shows on this, that they've, you know, of all the contentious subjects that we take on here, it's like student loan discussions always send the needle, you know, through the roof, to mix a few metaphors, I guess. But I remember, and you probably remember the same thing, when we were in college, you know, someone would say, yeah, I had to take out a student loan. What do you owe, man? Oh, I owe $1,800, you know. Or, I mean, now you can put about four zeros after all of that if you wind up going to medical school. Or, yeah, as people wind up out of a bachelor's with owing $20,000.
Yeah, that's not unusual among students who've borrowed money. It's close to $20,000 that they graduate.
Now, President Obama has just signed this bill, which not for health care, but for student loans, is single-payer universal coverage here, is that the government is going to be do the federal student loans and kick the guys that have been charging the big interest rates and out of there. So does this seem...
Yeah, I think that's a good change. It's going to improve the efficiency of the system. I don't think the government should be in the business of guaranteeing loans made by private banks. If they want to be in business, and that's fine, but I don't think we should be subsidizing them or protecting them from any losses on the downside. That's how we got into pretty serious trouble with the current
bailout. That's what this does.
Bailout. So I think this is a really good change, and it's going to save us some money overall, but it's not really expanding the overall amount of money available through student loans. And even though there's some modest increases in financial aid also coming through this legislation, they're not going to do a lot to help families in the middle of the income distribution.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that happens, you mentioned France and was it Denmark, I think, where they have a fairly high tax structure. Of course, they get back an incredible medical universal health plan for everyone. They, as you said, their universities are next to cost-free, except now we have people that are saying the U.S. taxes are too high. We're being taxed to death and what have you, and there ought to actually be tax cuts for everyone.
Yeah, but I think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that state taxes, state and local taxes, have become more important proportionately in recent years, and those taxes are very regressive. They're affecting people in the middle, bottom and middle of the income distribution. Also, we have a lot of social policies that phase out as your income goes up, and federal financial aid is one of them. And the effect of a phase out, like in the Pell Grant system, is to kind of impose a tax on earning more money in the middle of the income distribution. And I think that's created a lot of resentment and anger about taxes. One of the things I try to do in Saving State U and in general in conversations about the tax system is argue that we really need to shift the incidence of taxes away from the bottom, where it's increased, and toward the top. And that's obviously the same general policy that the Obama administration is advocating. I think a lot of people have a hard time hearing that message, though, when they see state and local taxes continuing to take a big bite, even if they're really struggling.
Yeah, well, you know, you're a professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts, and involved with market forces. Some people say we just let the market do it, and that'll sort it out. The people that can afford to go to college and can cut through it all, well, they're the ones that sort of survival of the fittest. Why this social engineering for equality?
Well, I think that people who advocate that we should live in an economy based on every man for himself are really misunderstanding what the cost of moving in that direction would be. I, for instance, have been really struck by the fact that a lot of Tea Party activists who espouse this every man for himself philosophy also express a lot of disapproval of free trade. That they're arguing that government has messed us up because it hasn't defended us against cheap imports from abroad. Well, you know, you can't have it both ways. If you want to be a citizen of a country that makes a collective commitment to protect the jobs and the welfare of its citizens, then you have to accept the responsibilities of paying for those commitments. You know, I think that if we move towards a kind of every man for himself economic regime right now, we would see our collective living standards go down. Everybody would be hurt.
I think so. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on my show. The book is Saving State U, Why We Must Fix Public Higher Education. And it's not just a complaint. It's also suggestions on how we as citizens can move towards the fix. My guest has been Nancy Fulbright. She's a professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts. And her book is available through the New Press. You can go to thenewpress.com. It'll also be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Thanks so much for being on my show.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
There are many debt relief plans and scams out there. So if you find yourself with $10,000 or more in credit card debt, get the facts about legitimate debt relief solutions available to you. Call American Credit Card Solutions for a free informational kit that will tell you about your options in simple, easy-to-understand language. The kit is free. The shipping is free. And the consultation is free. Call now, 800-541-5656. There's no hard sell and no pressure. The free informational kit can be mailed to you today so you can examine all the debt relief options available with no one pressuring you to make a quick decision. Call 800-541-5656. This is a first-come, first-serve offer, and kits are limited. So call right now for your free debt relief informational kit. Not available in all states. Call 800-541-5656. That's 800-541-5656.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronix Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronix Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronix Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Back to the Rock.
Your mommy told us you like to listen to music.
On 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.